Blog Talk Radio.
I don't know if I... Good evening. Welcome to...
This is Matt Daddy on the Saturday flight from the Tower of Power, the very top story in my wavy, gravy, groovy, gravy rocket laboratory, where we're bending every effort and making every test to be sure that our records are always the best. You see, before we play them on this crazy, wavy air, we dip them in this smoking vat with extra special care. Wearing thick, big rubber gloves and using special tongs, we make the Mad Dad acid test on the up-and-coming songs.
Good evening. Good evening and welcome to Erie House. Oh, jeez, I almost am going to sound like this. I swear. Good evening. Welcome to Erie House, oldie timey radio. It's Friday night once again here at 8:30-ish. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show here along with...
Diving down deep for tonight's show, Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we're here with Mr. Microwave.
I am no chemical reparator. It is I, God's Gold, blade to you all.
Welcome, Fogsbane and GGSI Paper, always getting a seat up front, getting here early, so they don't miss anything. Catch the view.
Kamikaze pirate. No.
It's always good.
Go ahead.
We're going underwater, man, and this time it's not just financially.
Although we do that.
Yes. We are going down deep into the depths of the ocean, even, with tales about submarines.
Yes, a lot of interesting tales here of suspenseful submarine stories. Even have a story with Clark Gable in it, believe it or not.
Yep. From Cavalcade of America. That'll be a little later on. Take her down. We also have an episode of Escape. Good. It's been a while since we've had Escape.
Yep.
And now hear this.
What?
Have we had... Is that first? Is that first?
What do you want me to hear?
What?
It's the name of the show. Dave, is that the first time on the show for Now Hear This?
Yes, it is.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, right.
Yes, it is. First time for Now Hear This. And they're basically Navy stories, I believe it's Navy stories, and basically told through the eyes of what would be the not the top generals or commanders of the submarine or captains or whatever. It's told by the seamen, the crew.
Well,
soon as I said that word, I knew Dale was going to have a problem.
Yeah. Now Hear This is information that went to everyone on the ship. It was a 1MC type thing, and everyone heard that. They would tell you when you could smoke, when you could not smoke, which was kind of weird on a submarine that they had. It says in there, on one of these, now I might be wrong, but I think these were all submarines, it said the smoking light is out. And the smoking lamp means you cannot smoke, or you can smoke your cigarettes back in the day when people used to do that.
Look, I'm
the reason for that was a single ember could be seen for like 4 miles away on the sea, and it would give away your position. So you couldn't, there were certain times when you couldn't smoke.
Ah. I thought there were smoking lights on a submarine. I just can't imagine. I'm a smoker, right? But
there's,
I am not getting trapped underwater.
There's no
underwater.
Reason for that on a submarine.
Yeah.
You should be able to smoke 24/7.
Yeah, I would. Okay.
But if you're on a ship, you're above, your people can see you.
Yeah.
So didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Dale, right when you said, when you pushed the button for on this week, it rang through my head, the Cheech and Chong little comedy bit about describing to the pilots what they were going to do as kamikaze pilots. And
oh,
I just cracked up because, You're going to take your ship. You're going to run it right into the deck of this, of the other, of that ship over there. And this one guy goes, yeah, Fuji, you got a question. And I can't repeat what he says. But
yes.
It's very funny.
I think something like you're out of your mind.
Are you out your, yeah, I know.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Ah, the days.
It cracked me up remembering that. Mm. Ah, the days. Another thing you can't say on television. Well, actually, you probably could say that on television today.
You probably could, yeah. You probably could.
The television got a little bit loose.
You know, it's really so
at least,
weird. There's,
at least
there's,
if you're cable, yeah.
Yeah. It's really weird. There's for some reason, there's some cigarette smoke coming out of a hole in my neck. I don't understand. Anyway.
Isn't that strange? Almost like you've met Vlad the Impaler with marshmallows.
With marshmallows, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't have the marshmallows, but anyway, I almost skewered myself. Mm-hmm. Just to bring
Dale's his own
radio
kamikaze
show.
Pilot. Yeah.
The things we do.
What, because we're clumsy oxes?
Yes, one of us does.
Kamikaze movies or something.
Yeah. Where will we begin tonight?
Where shall we begin?
At the bottom. No.
That's true. We could do that.
At the bottom.
How about now hear this? Since it's new to the channel, let's...
Now hear this.
Let's
now
get off
hear
the
this.
Bang here.
Yeah.
Yeah,
these are
okay,
crazy because I was in the Navy, and so some of these ring clear.
Yeah, stories told on Now Hear This come through the eyes of rugged old chief, boss, and mate, who has seen it in all his 30 years at sea. Any Navy vet can tell you that the real backbone of the Navy is the old chief petty officers, those seniors enlisted personnel who have been around long enough to learn the lessons there are to learn. A chief has taken on the job of teaching those lessons to younger blue jackets. Were you a blue jacket, Gar?
Beats me.
Oh, okay.
I might have had a jacket. It might have been blue. I don't know.
As well as teaching our junior officers what it means to lead men. I was only in the Navy once, and that was for our high school production of South Pacific. So.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Hey, and before we start this episode, let me try my very own. Now hear this. Now hear this. This is the first episode of Erie House. Since Dave was inducted into the Horror Host Hall of Fame, the official induction ceremony will be coming up, this September, right, Dave?
September 11th.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
September 11th. Yep, yep.
Congratulations, Dave.
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you. Well, and it took everybody out there I just thought, you know, they were supposed to be released on Monday, and they didn't get released Monday. So, great, there's so many votes. I was hoping for a quick jury because, you know, usually when you have a quick jury, you have an acquittal. Well,
yeah.
You know, the more they were voting, the more people there were. So, well, geez, I'm not that well-known how some of these people are. And so the longer they take, the more votes they got, the less chance I got. But you know what? I snuck in there. They needed somebody to lower the bar.
I don't know. I bet
think.
It wasn't snuck, Dave. There's a lot of people who like you, respect you for what you do, the way you do it. You get along with everybody. It's just not a surprise to me that you would.
Actually, it was to me. Many times I've been to things, no, not quite as prestigious as this, but near as prestigious as this, where I get there and then I quickly get disappointed, but but no, not so this time. Wow. No,
well,
yeah.
In the last 2 weeks, Dale hasn't been able to stand on his own. However, Dave, you have, and you are now standing neck and neck, side by side with Count Floyd. It's like, wow,
yeah,
well,
I'm hoping. I'm hoping he comes. Wouldn't it be cool if Count Floyd came to Cincinnati?
Oh, that would be amazing. You know, but yeah, you're you know on the same level, Count Floyd. My goodness, that's awesome. So again,
there's been many classic horror hosts inducted, of course, early on. for their contributions, folks like Vampira and Zachary and Goulardi and many, many
yeah,
others.
Yeah, I think they're the Northeast Ohio has its own amazing wing with, I think, yep. What, just about anybody. I mean, I know Sonny Ghoul is there. The Ghoul is there, right? I'm sure he is.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm the one who inducted him.
Okay. Goulardi. Yeah. The Houlihan, Big Chuck, Little John, Superhost. They're all there.
Yeah.
They're all there.
I'm not sure, but I think Mad Daddy Pete Myers is in there.
I was wondering about that.
I think. They have it listed somewhere, probably on the Horror Hound website or something. If you wanted to check
now,
that out.
Elvira Mistress of the Dark made it in there, didn't she?
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Most of your famous TV horror hosts have been in for some time.
Yep. And who wouldn't want to be in the same room with Elvira? That's what I want to know.
I believe I also inducted Houlihan. I was very lucky be in that position. Yeah. Two or three people I've inducted in there.
Yeah, I was I went to hear Dan O'Shannon, a Hollywood writer from Cleveland, who moved back to Cleveland. And even Michael Chesky came up to me and congratulated me. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, we were lucky to have him here on this show. And Dave, we got to interact with him a few times.
Yes, we have. We did that on his... our Superman show as well. So,
yep, he was gracious enough to let us tape a nice presentation he made. More about Dave, more about submarines after part one of Now Hear This with Operation Submarine. Here's part one.
Now hear this. Now hear this.
The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the United States Navy Recruiting Service, presents Now Hear This, dramatic stories based on the personal experiences of those gallant men and women who embody the great traditions of a great service, the United States Navy.
After you spent 30-odd years in the Navy, the last 14 answering to Now Scott, Chief Bosun, you might say you've decided on a career. Now, we have a book entitled Navy Regulations. It's the book, the one you live by. If you're a Chief Bosun mate, you get to know this book better than your mother. It covers everything except how to answer the questions of a future admiral. A boat is carried by a ship. We don't have floors and doors. We have decks and hatches. You don't salute a chief, and you don't forget to salute an officer. What's upstairs? It's topside. What's in back? It's aft. What's tighter than a sailor's trousers? A submarine. About 10 years ago, I shipped on the USS Barracuda. That's a little fish with a big bite. She inherited the name from a little sister who roamed the seas around 1913. All told, there were 75 men in officers. 75 full-grown men in a ship not much wider than your living room. It's so nice and compact that the first rule of the submarine service is hang your blues in your bunk and your rate at the gangway.
Now, this is a picture of me on a surfboard. And this is a picture of me with that hula dancer.
Uh-huh.
This is me with the waitress at the Royal Palm.
Well, that takes care of the outdoor sports. Now, just what did you do with your evenings? No details, just a brief resume.
Ah, those nights. 5 days in Hawaii and I didn't lose a minute.
Oh, brother. Dream on, little man.
Yeah, how do you like this number, Steve? Don't look too quick. Just, you're liable to get blind, sort of sneak up on it.
Well, for a little man, Tommy, you seem to have done all right.
Seem? You guys sure take a lot of convincing. Just let me say it'll be a long time before the female population of Hawaii forgets Tommy Crown. Of course, I made sure I didn't spread myself too thin. After all, I gotta save something for the girls in Manila.
You go on duty in about 20 minutes. I'll radio ahead and let them know you're coming.
Yeah, do that, my good man, and I'll see what I can do about getting a friend for you.
Hey, Steve.
Huh?
How do you spell Oahu?
O-A-H-U.
Irish, you got pretty good taste in dames. What do you think about
this
little number?
Finish this letter, Tony.
You should have known better than to ask a married man.
All of us make mistakes.
Imagine writing a letter to a dame, even if she is your wife, when you're 1,000 miles from the nearest mailbox. Nuts. Nuts.
Yeah, I think maybe when I get to Manila, I'm going to apply for a transfer. There's no place to stretch your legs on a sub.
I was brought up on the east side of New York. Only 6 of us in 4 rooms. We was aristocrats. Real class. You think this sub is crowded? Where I come from, the whole neighborhood lives in your kitchen. You go to sleep, listen to the Kowalskis tossing crockery. The Levine kids scraping a fiddle. And the O'Briens trying to marry off a daughter. Me? I like it.
Hey, Steve, what's today?
What?
I said, what's today?
Sunday, I think. Yeah, every day's the same on a subway.
Well, I got to keep these letters in rotation. Promise Mary that I write every day.
Oh, brother, no dame is going to put a collar on me. It must be Sunday. Seems like Sunday.
I mean the date. We left Hawaii on, I think the 5th.
So count. Friday was the 5th. I know, because I had to break a date with Duke somebody's daughter. Saturday was the 6th. So this is Sunday, December 7th.
Every day is the same on a sub. Even that day. We were cruising along the surface making 12 knots. The sun was shining. Sea was calm. It was like any other morning. By an unspoken agreement, the men avoided the war in Europe, and the morning mess was noisy with the coming Rose Bowl game, where we'd celebrate New Year's Eve and the merits of the food on a submarine.
So it's good.
It's great. And they don't short serve you.
I had a hitch on a cruiser. My wife throws out better stuff than they serve.
Okay, so the food is good. I've been in phone booths with more leg room than a sub.
Steve, I got it. I got the whole thing solved.
Oh, it's impossible. It can't be done. You owe me a fiver.
Nothing is impossible. Tough, maybe, but not impossible.
Pass the bread. What's not impossible?
Getting a dame aboard a sub. Figured the whole thing out. Just got the last minor detail.
Now, remember, the bet is that only the enlisted guys can know. You got to get her past the duty officer, through the conning tower.
What do you mean, conning tower? The bet was get her aboard.
Pass the salt, huh?
Yeah, it's right in front of you. Now, here's how I can do it.
Tommy, not even you can...
Please, you're referring to Tommy Crown. And when I say I can do something...
All hands. Now hear this. This is the captain. We have just received a dispatch that the Japanese commenced hostilities by attacking Pearl Harbor this morning.
We just left, what?
We have no details, but you can rest assured we won't like what we hear.
Pearl Harbor? Why Pearl Harbor?
Shut up.
We will execute unrestricted air and submarine warfare against Japan. I'll give you more when I get it.
Don't seem possible.
Okay. So they want to fight.
Those little... I never believed they'd really do it.
I ain't hungry.
Nothing. No warning. Just blast away. Ain't to think Admiral Perry showed them where we live.
Well, I never even seen a Jap. I've been in Chinatown, only I guess the Japs don't... Hey, Irish, where you going?
I've got to write to Mary. Tell her I'll be a little late for dinner.
In a word, we were sick. Sure, we'd been trained for war. War was our business. Only in the United States Navy, you didn't go around looking for business. You tried to avoid it. We were stunned, scared, and sick. The chiefs and officers were crowded into the wardroom by the captain. As he gave us the details, we got a lot sicker.
You'd better make yourself secure, because this is going to kick you around.
How bad, sir?
Miller, if only half of what they reported is true, we're flat on our back. Pearl Harbor took a beating. And there's not much left of it. Or of the Pacific Fleet.
The Arizona?
A direct hit in the magazine.
Gee.
Look, I don't suppose...
Only in round numbers, no casualty list.
My brother was on the Arizona.
It's not good. The Arizona, the Pensy, the California, the Shaw, Ogala. Just about everything that was floating.
There's a whole Pacific fleet.
Close enough. They haven't separated the dead from the wounded, but there'll be plenty of both.
What are our orders, sir?
We'll follow Plan Able. We got plenty of fuel and plenty of torpedoes. And we're going to cruise our assigned sector of the Pacific and make sure that we're out of torpedoes before we're out of fuel.
What shall I tell the men, sir?
The truth.
Yes, sir.
And just so they won't get too cocky, tell them the Pacific is a Japanese ocean.
I told him the truth, and then some more of the truth. If you've been brought up to play it fair, it takes a while to get used to the fact that the other guy plays dirty. We heard about the sneak punch, but we didn't think anyone would pull it on us, which made us a candidate for all-world sucker. At first, the men got sick. Then they got sore. Then they started thinking of the shipmates at Pearl, and they got sick again.
Steve, you spent a leave in Tokyo. What are they like?
How should I know?
But you were there. You ought to know.
I don't. That's all there's to it. I don't know what they're like. In the cartoons, they all wear glasses.
Yeah, I've seen some of those. Only that don't tell you anything. My old lady wears glasses.
All those ships. Makes you feel sort of naked.
Well, not me.
Cocky. You know what? We were so cocky, they pushed our teeth in.
They've got buck teeth.
Well, I don't feel cocky. I think maybe we got a long fight on our hands.
We sure bedded down for it. Irish on the top bunk, you under him, me under you, and under me is sleeping a nice, fat torpedo.
I only hope your bunk mate doesn't roll out of bed.
Not Annie. I'm saving her for a Jap battleship.
Annie? What a stupid name for a torpedo. No bite. No nothing.
You want to know why I named her Annie?
No.
Promise you won't tell the rest of the guys. I promise you'll keep it a secret?
I said no.
Well, how about you, Irish?
What have I got to lose?
Well, say you promise and I'll tell you.
I promise. I now pronounce you man and wife.
Yeah, maybe I better not tell you.
Tommy, if this is another one of those stories with no answer...
No, it's only that... Okay. A couple of years ago, I had my first leave, so I went back to the old neighborhood.
And you met a girl named Annie.
Yeah, this kid had everything. Looks,
yeah,
figure...
Yeah.
So I come home in my brand new sailor suit, and I bunk into her accidentally.
Oh, sure.
Okay, so don't believe me, only it was an accident. But I figured I might as well take advantage of it. So I grabbed her and kissed her.
Keep going.
That's all. I kissed her.
And that's why you're calling the torpedo Annie?
Yeah. Did she have a wallop?
Captain, I got a target coming out of that overcast on the port bow.
Port sound.
Port sound, Roddy.
What have you got?
Target on port bow. Range 2500, bearing 340. Other high-speed Broughton noises from 325 to dead ahead, sir. Must be target screen.
Helmsman, keep on this course.
Aye, aye, sir.
Kick her up to two-thirds.
All ahead, two-thirds. Aye, aye, sir.
We can get her, Mr. Miller, if we can get by her escort.
Captain
here.
Something's closing in on us fast. High-speed Broughton.
Keep on it. Mark. Bearing 305. Range 1800, 3 destroyers, 0 angle on the bow. The cans are making a run. Pull the plug.
Pull the plug. That's Navy for crash dive. When a submarine digs her nose straight into the belly of an ocean, the insides of a man begin to contract. 1,000 things come into your mind. How close are they? How fast can we get down? How much ocean can we put between us? Nobody talks. Nobody breathes. Everybody prays. You're a sitting duck and you know it. You're a scared pigeon trying to pull a notion over your head. And then, with an easy sway and move, the sub levels off. Everything is turned off. There isn't a sound. You count the depth charges that are searching for your back. And then when the first couple don't hit you, try to make casual conversation to see if anyone else is as scared as you are.
Kaboom. That's part one of Now Hear This.
So a lot of terms in there give you a recall, Gar?
I'm back. I pressed the wrong button on my phone. There's a mute button, I guess. Okay.
So,
a whole bunch of terms on there that, you know, get your gig lined straight, and it's a smoking lamp. And the reason it's called a lamp instead of a light is because back when they came up with these terms, electricity wasn't around. The military terms go back to oars and wooden boats, and we've been at war forever. So it's called a smoking lamp. I didn't get that when I didn't understand that too much. I was like, there are no lamps on board the ship. What are they talking about? And, you know,
well,
explain.
U.S. Navy business goes back to 1798, I guess, is what it says here.
That's a little bit before the electric light bulb, maybe.
A little bit, yes.
A little bit.
A couple days.
So they had lamps, of course, just, you know,
I just can't believe there'd be smoking on a submarine, you know? That just blows my mind.
Well, no, there are all kinds of ways to clean the air on those things. Now, when they first did it, you know, and it was basically
you never want to serve chili on a submarine.
Well, there's a lot to be said for air filtration, so yeah, you know.
Well, if they can do it on a submarine, why can't they do it in an aeroplane?
Or an elevator.
Yeah.
It's called a cruel sense of humor.
Yes. Just for those who are keeping score, we had an air date of July 8th, 1951 on this one.
Ah, thank you for bringing us back to Earth on that topic, because I forgot to ask for the date. Bad, Dale, bad.
I was sitting there.
Somebody
going,
ought to stab him in the neck.
Yeah, I know.
Your backyard could do a better weekend.
Uh-huh. Lucky I can do that.
I'm guessing you're multi-jointed or something to be able to do all the weird things you've been doing the last few weeks.
Yes. I don't know. I don't know. It's one of those things, you know. It's fine.
Just one of those things.
You take your plane. You ram it into the side of the ship.
You are crazy.
You out of your bipping mind.
Bip, bip, bip.
Bip, bip, bip.
Which is the sound of radar on a submarine. So let's wrap up.
Sonar. Oh, that was really quick. I was on a ship, and we were, and I was below the water at one of the lower compartments. And I heard sonar, and I was like, whoa, we're getting beeped. That was crazy. I was like, why is someone beeping us? But you would hear bing, bing, bing. It was weird. We could have been torpedoed.
It could have been Ricochet Rabbit.
It could have been.
Bing, bing, bing.
Bing. Yeah, you just never forget some noises, I guess. Yeah.
I'll never forget Ricochet Rabbit.
Or that. That steak in your garden. Yeah, that either.
No. No, I had that area all staked out and...
Oh, there it is. There you go.
Thank you, thank you.
There we go.
Okay. With that being said,
back to the waves and the torpedoes and all that fun stuff.
And all the fun stuff that the Navy has to offer in Operation Submarine.
Yeah.
Close. They still haven't got our position.
How long you figure we've been sitting here, Boats?
8 hours, maybe more. Hard to tell. Don't those guys ever give up?
Yeah, they get a nice shiny medal from the Emperor.
close enough for you, Boats.
That was close. Hey, watch the way you're swinging that foot, Tommy.
Huh?
If your heel hits that torpedo, the sound will shoot right into their detecting gear, and then boom.
Yeah, I gotta watch that. Say, Boats, you don't think they can hear us talk? I mean, the captain said if we kept from yelling...
Relax.
I'm relaxed, only I don't want to carry it too far.
Say, how do you spell the...
You're not writing another letter, not now.
Why not?
Hey, you got a point. Give me a pencil, Steve.
Huh? Here.
Now, what dame is just dying to hear from me? Annie? Betty? Carol? Dinah?
How about it?
You're still around. You can afford patience when you got a pat hand.
You want to talk about it, Miller?
About what, Captain?
Come on, kid. Get it off your chest. You'll feel better.
I'd feel better if I had a chance to get even. Funny how hard I want to get even.
You don't know for sure that your brother...
What chance did he have? What chance did any of them have?
Well, you can't tell.
You made the rounds with me. All the boys know somebody at Pearl. They figure maybe their buddy was the lucky one. You have to figure it that way.
It was Mom's favorite. Funny, isn't it? We were twins. And he was Mom's favorite.
They've got us boxed, Steve.
Think I'd better walk back and tell the captain? After all, it ain't fair not to tell the old man.
Let him guess for a while. He loves surprises.
How do you figure it, Boats?
We're perfectly safe.
All right, come on, Boats. Stop with the bilge.
Well, in a dice game, I'm betting right.
Well, that's as good an answer as any. 8 solid hours, no sign of a stop. How much of this can a guy take?
Lots.
Yeah. If we could only get a crack at him. If we only didn't have to sit and take it.
We shake our bustle and they'll bust us apart.
Yeah, I know. I'm just talking so I don't have to think.
Hey, you're worrying about nothing.
Anybody else got a comment?
No comment. The Pacific is a big ocean. I've covered every inch of it.
If they split us open, you'll cover about 3 feet of the bottom.
That's why they give us more pay. You know, an old sailor once told me they could afford it because subs don't have survivors.
Now, that's a cute thought. What did you guys do in civilian life? Scare little babies?
I wondered whether we could get to you.
You know, I'm soaked. Everything is sticking to me.
Nerves. Now, Tommy here, nothing bothers him.
Button it up, Steve.
No, he don't bother me. You see, I'm letting the captain handle the Japs.
Oh, that's considerate.
Me? I got a problem.
So does the captain.
The way I figure it, this is December 24th.
Goes to show you what an education will do.
And I'm stuck in a submarine sitting under the Pacific.
At least you got company. For a while, anyway.
So it's Christmas Eve, and I'm going down in history...
A hero.
...as the only guy who ever hung a stocking on the warhead of a torpedo.
In our Navy, the term qualified in submarines has a very special meaning. You see, submarine service requires far more than the ordinary... because the submarine itself is an efficient but highly complicated and specialized type of warcraft. And in times of war, a submarine frequently operates independently in waters controlled by the enemy. So the Blue Jackets who serve as crew members aboard our submarines must be men who are physically fit, superior in their specialties, and proven in their intelligence and judgment. Each must be a volunteer with a strong desire to serve aboard undersea craft. Submarine service is a challenge to the youth of America, because membership is highly selective. And for those who are selected, there's the opportunity to win dolphins, the coveted insignia, which indicates that the wearer is qualified in submarines, a member of the team which forms one of our first lines of national defense, the submarine service of the United States Navy.
Sweating it out down there, listening to Japanese depth charges makes a man get old long before his time. Jokes just don't seem to come off. Conversation dies, and the men crawl into their own memories. You'd be amazed how cold you can get in a 90-degree temperature. And then, just as suddenly as they started, the depth charges stopped. We followed the three Jap destroyers on the sonar and listened to them disappear. We sat for a couple more hours and then began to slowly pick ourselves up and take a look. The captain swung the periscope around once, twice, and decided that this part of the Pacific was ours. So we left and headed for Japan, which was theirs.
I just don't get it. Here we are in the middle of a war. Here we are trying to beach ourselves in Tokyo Bay, and I'm washing down ladders.
That's to keep you in shape.
I should be sitting by that torpedo tube keeping Annie company.
Mm-hmm. I'll speak to the captain.
Never mind. When I see him, I'll handle it myself. He's been topside so long he don't realize that he's wasting my talent.
Look, stop talking. Keep scrubbing.
Huh? Oh, you sound like my mother.
Fate worse than death?
Believe me, that captain...
Everything
know...
all right, men?
Yes, sir.
All right as rain, Captain. I was just telling Irish here that with you at the helm, we got nothing to worry about.
Well, the Navy must have changed since my day. When I was washing down, I always figured the captain was wasting my talents. Carry on.
What was it you were going to tell the captain?
Irish, the guy ain't you.
How about it, Sparks?
Nothing, sir.
It should be. I got an idea that enemy troop ships are leaving their home port for the Philippines. I'll let them get a crack at one.
Yes, sir.
Carry on, and Sparks, if you pick up anything in these waters, it'll be Jap.
You sleeping, Irish?
Yeah.
I can't sleep. Every time I close my eyes, I remember how it was a few hours ago.
What time is it?
About 5 in the morning.
Yeah. We go on duty at 8. Try to keep it down. I'm knocked out.
Yeah. They celebrate Christmas in Japan?
I guess so.
Some do, some don't.
That don't make sense.
Those that have been converted. Only I doubt very much if they dare celebrate anything but the Emperor's birthday.
Every minute we get closer to Japan. I ain't chicken, only wish Sparks was bunking with us. He'd keep us posted.
I sure could use a newspaper.
Radio would be better. Just to hear a newscaster every hour on the hour.
You write to your wife yet, Irish?
Yeah. About 2 hours ago.
Well, next time you write, say hello for me.
The tension kept mounting. We were so deep into enemy waters it made our skin crawl just to think about it. But we had the full details of the Pearl Harbor raid, and we wanted a chance to get even, to show them that we were in condition to go the full route.
You want to see me, Captain?
I've got an idea that I can catch an enemy convoy when it heads for the Philippines. How does this route look?
Well, that would depend on their destination.
Supposing it was Manila Bay. Now, the fleet that blasted Pearl Harbor might rendezvous with a troop convoy.
Yeah, but we still don't know how strong the British are.
They're worse off than we are. We'll take our chance.
All right, then I'd come around here. Right past this group of islands, pick up my protection, and then full steam for any point in the Philippines I wanted.
Fort Sound calling the captain.
This is the captain in control room. Go ahead, Fort Sound.
Just picked up heavy screws on Fort Bow. Estimated range about 8,000 yards.
I can pick her up in the periscope. Come on, Miller. Up scope.
Hello, baby. Welcome to the party. Take a look, Miller.
It's all alone.
What do you make of a
troop or a supply ship?
Let me take another look. Let's say we're about 1,500 yards off a track.
Well, I'll pick up our scope. You could roll dice on that ship.
We'll take our chances. Sound battle stations, mister. And tell them to hold onto their hats.
Why don't we get the word? Annie wants to go swimming.
Scuttlebutt says we're tailing the troop ship.
Well, it's been long enough. We could be halfway down a smokestack by this time.
Yeah, you're wishing, Tommy. Take it easy. Take it easy.
Look who's talking.
We gotta get close. Real close.
We could only see what we're heading for.
Come on, Captain. Give us the word. Give us the word.
They haven't picked us up yet. We're in their own backyard, so they think they got nothing to worry about. Make ready all bow tubes. Open the outer doors.
Captain.
What does it sound?
I picked up something out there ahead. Comes back like a destroyer.
I can't see too far on that bearing.
No change in bearing.
She's heading for us.
Yes, sir.
Keep me posted. Steady as you go, helmsman. What's generated range and bearing, Mr. Miller?
3500. 300.
Not close enough. Destroyer or no destroyer, I want this baby and I want her bad.
Could have swum that far in half the time. And all I know is the dog paddle.
If we get picked up, half the Jap Navy will be down our throats. Yeah, I hope the captain's playing it safe.
I can only think of a name for my torpedo. Any kind of a name.
Oh, what a time to wake up. Where you been, Irish? There's a war on.
All torpedo ready, lights on.
Stand by for final observation and shoot. Bearing, mark.
Mark, 3, 4, 2.
Set.
Range, mark, downscope.
One, 3, 7, 5.
Set.
Hang on the bow, starboard 70.
Solution check, skipper. Gyro regulators match.
Stand by.
Ready on one. That's you, Irish. That's you.
I'm ready. I'm ready. You think I'm deaf?
Fire one.
8, 7, 6, 5, 4.
Torpedo three. Running hot, straight, two. Normal.
Fire two.
Be there, Annie. Be there, Annie. Be there, Annie. Be there, Annie.
Oh, we got one home, Mary. We got one home.
Shut up.
The door's still open, Annie.
Both of them. They both connect.
You like that?
Oh, you know what I gotta say to them Japs?
Irish, hold me back before I kiss this ugly little sailor.
So I say to them, Merry Christmas, you jerks.
We celebrated for about 5 seconds and then hauled our tails out of there. It didn't take a naval genius to know that the enemy was swooping down to get us. We headed south, then east, back south. And when our torpedoes were exhausted and our fuel almost gone, we put back to Pearl Harbor. Our conning tower proudly wore a broom signifying a clean sweep, and 3 little rising suns signifying that we might be down, but we were far from out. And to the poem that ended, "So Sally, my garden now," we added, "Now... but not for long."
All hands secure until 17:30 next Sunday.
National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the United States Navy Recruiting Service, has brought you another in the series of dramatic incidents based on experiences of the men and women of the United States Navy. In today's story, Boats was Arnold Robertson, and the cast included Jackson Beck, Joe Curtin, Lyle Sudrow, Bill Suckert, Grant Richards, and Leon Janney. The program was written and directed by David Harmon and produced by Chick Vincent and Cy Levine. Tune in again next week at this same time when the National Broadcasting Company will once again present...
Now hear this.
Stay tuned for You Can't Take It With You on NBC.
And you can take Erie House wherever you like, as long as you can get online. Listen to us right here.
Even on your phone, your smartphone device. Yep. You can do that.
And in the archives.
There you go. And there's something else. Erie House Radio proudly presents Agar's Moral of the Story.
Woohoo!
In the game of chess, the pawn doesn't know why it's moved.
There you go.
It doesn't have a clue. It just moves. It doesn't know why.
Probably that big hand that picks it up and puts it one or two spaces ahead, you know.
There you go.
Leaving it out there to sacrifice for the good of the team.
And in, I'm not really sure. I mean, it used to be you were weeded out by testing. There's a certain type of people that have to get approved to be on a submarine, the personality test and all kinds of different things in order to be on there as part of the crew.
Oh, you mean like not be claustrophobic for one, things that kind of
thing?
Yeah.
Could be. That might be something.
I would be shot. I couldn't do it. The claustrophobia would be not good for me or anyone around me.
If you're on some of the other, if you're on a ship as well, that can be very claustrophobic as well. Probably maybe it's better for someone that has that problem not to be on a confined thing like a ship or a sub. I actually got to go onto a sub. A friend of mine did get stationed there, and I was on a ship. They were on a sub, and he came over and said, "Hey, man, come on over." And I came over and walked around on a sub. It's very similar to being on a ship. It's just low ceilings. Yeah. So.
Low bridge.
Yeah. Well, on a ship, there's an opportunity to go up on the main deck and no ceilings. Not so much on a sub. Actually, while I was stationed, they would have a sub that would park at the docks, you know, and they'd raise up and they'd, you know, everybody go out. Well, 1 year, and it was near Christmas time, so it was really even doubly worse. They had a guard stationed on the sub, so you've got your conning tower where everybody comes out and goes in. And then they've got this little area, and they've got it kind of chained up where there's a guard up there. And we had severe waves, and it was winter. It was like Christmas time. And I went off on my vacation. I came back, and I heard this, and I was like, oh, my gosh. A wave came up and hit the guard that was up on top of the sub guarding the entrance and knocked him off into the drink. And that was the end of him. Hypothermia nailed him. He sank right down. That was the end of that guy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was like, wow, really? And I was like, yeah. That was kind of crazy.
Ouch.
Yeah.
You never catch me on a ship without water wings.
Yeah. And even when they go down, like they said, the cork's out or whatever they said, when they do take those dives, you got two things going on. One, an amazing temperature change, and then also the pressure change, because you're only supposed to go down. It's 24 pounds of atmospheric pressure on you every X number of atmospheres. And, you're going into it. It's like a diving bell. It's just crazy.
I always wanted a diving bell.
Really? I tried that once, but I ended up with a Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Hey, we got a lot of radio.
Yeah.
That we do. It's time to move along to our next feature.
Yes. How many old nautical stories will Gar have this week? Yeah, I know.
Captain Bear.
Yeah. Well, I was there, man. I got to run across a few different ones.
Yep.
Okay, so we've got what, cavalcade or escape or what? Which way are we going to go?
Well, let's go with escape. We can wrap up with cavalcade a little later on.
Right. There's a date for escape.
There is this time.
There is.
This
unless Dave needs to fill us in about up Periscope or the...
No. Oh, we got
the
interesting.
Escape?
I think it's an interesting tale. I'm not going to give it away, but it's an interesting. The whole storyline is interesting, but
it is. It is. It's crazy. Yeah.
I never heard or thought of such a thing with this. The story. And I think it's supposed to be. Is this supposed to be based on fact? I don't know.
You got me. It's from an escape story, so I don't know.
Probably not. Probably not. Yeah.
Escape is always entertaining, and this one is from?
Date? From?
August 8th, 1951, according to eight people in Pearl Harbor.
Of a dull, dreaming again of exotic places, wishing you were somewhere else, we offer you Escape.
Escape with us now to the Yellow Sea and the story of a man who fought the entire Japanese Navy with an ancient submarine and an untrained crew, as Alec Hudson tells it in his exciting story, Up Periscope.
It happened in 1938. Pearl Harbor was just another naval base somewhere in the Pacific. And China, still further away, was swarming with Japanese invaders. And in 1938, a United States submarine, the S-52, docked at Pearl Harbor, and I walked down her gangplank. No longer a commanding officer, merely Lieutenant Thomas J. Baker, USN, retired. I said a fond farewell to the bosun's mate, tucked my commissioning pennant under one arm, and moved into the Moana Hotel on Waikiki, just outside Honolulu. And an hour later, I was at the Moana Bar, sipping an exotic Hawaiian drink known as bourbon and water, and toasting my lost career in silence. That was until a strange little man behind horn-rimmed glasses tapped my elbow.
Excuse me, please. Let me buy this drink for you, Lieutenant Baker.
Beg your pardon?
Oh, you do not know me, of course. But I have spent some hours searching for you, Lieutenant.
I didn't get the name.
It is Lee, Sung Lee. You are, of course, the former commanding officer of the submarine S-52.
Yeah.
You docked at Pearl Harbor on Tuesday, and today, at precisely 12 o'clock noon, you were relieved of your command by your executive officer.
Hey, now, wait a minute.
You received what your Navy refers to as a medical discharge. It was found that you are deaf in your left ear. Is that not correct, Lieutenant Baker?
Yeah.
You see. My facts are accurate.
Yeah.
I am an unofficial representative of the Chinese government. I have come to you with a business proposition.
A business proposition?
You are available, are you not?
Well, yeah, I think you could say that.
It is a pity that a young man such as yourself should have his chosen career destroyed by such a trivial matter as the hearing of a watch ticking.
You must have been there for the examination.
I am well aware of these matters. All too often, your Navy acts somewhat hastily, without due consideration for all of the facts.
What's your proposition, Mr. Lee?
You are direct. That is good. Lieutenant Baker, I have come to offer you command of a Chinese submarine for action against the Japanese invaders.
I beg your pardon?
It is true. The Chinese government desires that you take charge of a submarine for operations at the mouth of the Yangtze River.
The Yangtze?
You are familiar with this area, of course. Then perhaps you would consider the following terms. We will pay you $1,000 each month, plus your expenses. In addition to this amount, you will receive a bonus.
Go on, Mr. Lee.
A bonus of $50,000 for each major Japanese ship you might sink.
$50,000?
That is correct. Your answer, Lieutenant Baker?
Maybe you better give me a little time, Mr. Lee.
Time is of the essence. That is an American expression, is it not?
Make it 1 week. A week from today.
Well, 1 week from today, and we will have your answer. Need I remind you, Lieutenant, that in this matter, the utmost secrecy must be maintained.
Yeah, I'm aware of that, Mr. Lee.
Good. Thank you, Lieutenant. China will not forget you.
The market for slightly used submarine officers was at low ebb in 1938. So a week later, I met with Mr. Lee and three elderly Chinese. I made a counter-proposal. That I be allowed to hire three key men of my own choice as assistants. Mr. Lee and friends agreed. And I found myself promoted. Lieutenant Commander Thomas J. Baker, Chinese Navy. I wired three ex-shipmates. Two answered. Chuck Young, an engineer who'd been paid off after 16 years of service. And Jimmy Mann, my old chief torpedoman from the boats in Panama. A week later, Young and Mann arrived. And 2 days after that, Young, Mann, and myself took the clipper for Hong Kong. Our destination, Amoy. On the decks of Amoy, we were met by a bright-looking young man in a light blue gown and a black silk Chinese cap. He introduced himself.
You are Captain Baker, is it not correct? I am Wong, your first officer.
Now, how do you do, Wong? This is our engineer, Chief Young.
Yeah, howdy.
And our chief torpedoman, Jimmy Mann.
Glad to meet you, Mr. Wong.
With deepest gratitude and humility, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, sure thing.
If you gentlemen will follow me now, I'll show you your quarters. This way, please.
Hey, Skip. What does he mean, show us to our quarters? I don't even see a boat.
You see a Chinese junk port side to up ahead?
Sure, but who signed up for a junk? I thought we was back in a pig boat, maybe.
Open your eyes, man. It's a decoy. Subs under that straw and bamboo.
Now, what is this, a game?
They're fighting a war over here, man. That means jet bomber patrols.
Oh, I get it.
Congratulations.
Hey, stow it. Here comes one.
Will you step aboard now, please?
All right.
Okay.
That's your thing.
This is Lieutenant Lu, Captain. He's your second officer.
How do you do, Lieutenant?
Indeed, a pleasure to welcome you aboard, Captain.
What a Neptune, it's an S-boat.
It is indeed ancient, gentlemen, but we have kept it in good repair. Would you care to inspect our humble ship?
Yes, I would. Thanks, Long.
Lieutenant Lu and myself will see that your quarters are in order, gentlemen.
1918 class, 12 knots surfaced, 8 submerged.
That means 2 main diesels, 500 horse each. I put 10 years in on one of these fish.
And 4 torpedo tubes forward. That ain't much bite, Skipper.
No, it's the best we've got. All right, you two, now you've seen her. One S-boat to fight the Jap Navy. Here's where you sign on or off. Young?
I'm on, Skipper.
Man?
We got a crew of Chinese farmers that can't speak a word of English. We got an S-boat somebody dredged up from under the main. We got officers wearing blue kimonos.
Man, on or off?
Okay, Skipper, I'm on.
Man was right about the crew. Outside of Lu and Wong, not a man among them could understand even pidgin English. One thing about our Chinese S-boat was universal, the smell. The smell of fuel oil and acid and humans at work. And we worked around the clock. I was given 30 days to mold 800 tons of iron into a ship and a mass of Chinese peasants into a fighting force. Young complained constantly, the way a chief petty officer or a sergeant complains, so I knew he was making out all right. But Jimmy Mann came up with a unique problem.
Okay, Skipper, so now we got torpedo fuel. Best darn torpedo fuel I ever tasted.
Since when did you switch to grain alcohol?
You know we ain't got no grain alcohol. It's just that I found us a substitute.
All right, tell me about it.
Well, it seems there was some gin on the docks one day. Several cases. By rigging up my own little still, I was able, with tears in my eyes, to change the gin into torpedo fuel.
Well, I'll see if the Chinese government hasn't got a spare Navy cross.
Just call me Kentucky Jim Mann. We're serving old torpedo in a galley.
I made an itemized list out on the Chinese S-boat. It showed no deck guns, sound gear worse than useless, no fire control system for firing the torpedoes, and no flood control. Then one day toward the end of the month, Chuck Young brought up the real problem.
I tell you, Skipper, it can't be done. These old batteries are next to worthless.
Well, you can't expect much of batteries that have been lying around a back channel for years.
Expect much? But, Skipper, batteries are the life of a sub. If we got no batteries, we got no boat.
I'm painfully aware of that, Chuck.
You know what happens to old batteries? They seep hydrogen. One of these days, we're going to be submerged, and the hydrogen is going to start leaking out, and wham! We'd blow up like a Chinese firecracker.
Then we'll have to be cautious.
Cautious? With hydrogen? You can't see the stuff. You can't hear it. You can't smell it. Something makes a spark, the whole boat blows sky high.
All right, Chuck, have you got any suggestions?
Well, you're outside of forgetting the whole thing.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Now get your engine room in order, Chief. We're sailing for the Yangtze tomorrow.
We will return to Escape and today's story, Up Periscope, in just a moment. Did you know that for only $10 you can supplement the food rations of a family of four for a whole month? Just send that $10 to CARE, spelled C-A-R-E, New York. CARE guarantees delivery of its packages to 11 different countries in Europe, as well as to India, Israel, and Japan. Don't forget to include your name and address and the name and address of the family you want to receive the CARE package, because CARE is a person-to-person international goodwill service. And now, back to Escape!
We sailed north through the Formosa Strait, traveling submerged, surfacing only after sunset. It took us 10 days to get to the latitude of the Saddle Islands. And in those 10 days, my Chinese crew behaved like veterans. Just north of the Saddles, we took up station across the most probable route of the convoys coming down from Japan. One afternoon, we were in the middle of one of those Saddle Island fogs, with a 5-knot wind that blew the stuff in patches. At about 5 o'clock, a patch of clear weather blew in, and we went down. My first officer, Lieutenant Wong, was standing next to me. When I brought her to periscope deck and took a look around, my heart nearly jumped out of my mouth.
You're sighted something, Captain?
One, two, three, four, five. Good Lord.
It is Japanese convoy, Captain.
More than a convoy, Wong. An entire division. Heavy stuff. Battleships, cruisers, destroyers. Here, have a look.
Yes, Captain. It is as you say. 4,000 or 5,000 yards.
They're lying stern to. They're anchored waiting for the fog to lift. Wong, stand by to submerge.
But, Captain, an entire Japanese fleet...
Well, what do you think we're here for? Down periscope. Signal General Headquarters. We're going down to attack. Wong took the helm, and Lu was the diving officer, chanting his orders in sing-song Cantonese to the bow and stern planesmen. And in 2 minutes, our S-boat was ready to attack.
Torpedo tubes loaded and ready, Skipper.
Steady on course 210, Captain.
We'll run parallel at 1,500 yards. Hard right rudder.
Hard right rudder, sir.
Up periscope. Up periscope, sir. Steady on course 090.
090, sir.
We'll take the battle wagon first, Wong. That's Matsui class. Come left 5 degrees.
Come left 5 degrees, sir.
There she is, Wong. Lying there, inviting a tin fish.
Steady on course 0, right 5, sir.
Start timing.
10 seconds. 9 seconds. 8 seconds. 7 seconds. 6 seconds. 5 seconds.
Stand by to fire one.
4 seconds. 3 seconds. 2 seconds. 1 second. Time up.
Fire one. Hold it down, Lou. Don't broach her.
Hold on.
Fire two.
One, two, three,
four. Fire three.
Steady,
one. Steady,
sir.
Fire four. Down, periscope. Left, full rudder, full speed ahead.
You know, I'm going to go now, Marley.
Take it down to 100 feet.
Just on, you know. Over there, my son, you know, Marley, you know, Marley, you know.
Come to course, 340.
340, sir.
Down to 100 feet, Captain.
Captain, did we...
Wait a minute.
Skipper, it's ahead. Two.
Yes,
three. Four clean hits. Four out of four.
Fourth division of battle wagons got Jimmy, huh? Well, just don't stand there, man. Reload. We're going back for more.
Aye, aye, Skipper. The tubes are practically ready.
Well, that was an abrupt ending to that part.
Very abrupt.
Tube four.
On a scale of 1 to 8, that was abrupt.
Yes.
is very odd that a U.S. Individual that was in the military or on a ship would be approached by the Chinese to run their ship. That was kind of wild.
That's probably something like a mercenary, though. I can see that.
Okay, yeah. But
mercenaries
really
have been used
their...
different ways. They're not necessarily like these evil, bloodthirsty people, although they kill for a living.
Yeah.
I think I would qualify as evil, bloodthirsty, yes.
Yeah.
But there was a quickness. Like he was out of the military or whatever for less than a week, and all of a sudden somebody said, "Hi, yes, I see you're available." And they signed him up.
Well, that was a little creepy because that dude was like, "Stalker dude, I know all about you."
Yes, yeah, he knew everything about the guy. He was like, "Okay, we've been watching you for a while. We've been waiting for your bad ear to take you out of service."
And someone from another country, that makes you even more a little leery, like, wait, how
are
you not supposed
right.
to have
yeah,
a,
yeah.
what the,
yeah.
hey.
I was looking for a plot with
foreign,
it's
called
happen.
Foreign intelligence, foreign intelligence.
Yeah.
It's like the goon show the goon show used to say all the time. Someone happened, they say, "Damn those clever Chinese."
While they invented a rudder, hey, you know, and the compass,
and gunpowder,
and boom
and
booms over there,
right.
yeah,
and
right.
the boom booms over there, yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Can't go wrong. Yep.
This actually sent me looking into the Second Sino-Japanese War, and the Nanking Massacre, because I was kind of like, when did that happen? Because I was trying to put it together. I studied this stuff back in college way back when. Kind of wild. I tossed a little bit of history in the chat there about from the Pearl Harbor was 41, but in 37, escalations, war and stuff had been happening between China and Japan. In possibly the first Sino-Japanese War, and then the second Sino-Japanese War was like 41 and after, and that's when America actually sent our guys over to China to push out Japanese troops.
There you go. And that history lesson, courtesy of Gar the Ghoul. We're having a war with the clock here, so let's wrap up. Up Periscope from Escape.
Up that periscope, sure, why not?
Stand by to bring her up, Lou.
Aye, aye, Captain.
But four hits, Captain, surely.
Battleships can take it, Wong. We want to be sure.
Destroyer
dropping depth charges. They'll be spraying them like hand grenades.
Right full rudder.
Right full rudder, sir.
They're close. They're ready to fire again, Skipper.
Good. Stand by. Course 250.
250, sir.
Take her up, Lou.
Aye, aye, sir. Nemo, nada. It's only the money.
I had time for one quick periscope exposure, and it told me everything I could want to know. The Jap battleship lay on her side, her rail under. She was sinking. On the horizon, a group of destroyers were depth-charging the daylights out of some innocent fish. The fog was drifting in. It would be dark in half an hour. Now, there was no use wasting another torpedo on the battleship, and the destroyers were too tough to hit. I had 6 torpedoes left, and I wanted to save them for the big boys. I let Wong have a look through the periscope.
Oh, the battleship. We sunk the battleship. Wait until we report this to our leader.
We aren't finished yet.
Hey, Captain, look, quickly. Another big ship, close to us.
Let me have it.
That's cruiser. 10,000 tons at least. All right, sailors, there's our next target. Left full rudder.
Left full rudder, sir.
Stand by to fire one. Yeah, we'll have to gamble this one, Wong. Yeah, I guess we speed at 30 knots. Course 260. We'll take a 90-degree track. Down, periscope. Full speed ahead.
Full speed ahead.
Wong, start timing.
10 seconds. 9 seconds. 8 seconds. 7 seconds. 6 seconds.
Just at that instant, a Jap destroyer passed over us going like a shark after Barracuda. But it was too late to stop now.
1 second.
And I gave the word to fire one, then two, then three, then four. And we headed down, fast. I gotta take a look, Juan. Lou, take her up to periscope depth.
Periscope depth. Aye, aye, Captain.
Skipper, I gotta talk to you. Come on, just a minute.
Periscope depth, Captain.
Up periscope.
Up the periscope.
Cruiser's down by the stern, Jimmy. We got her.
Captain, listen to me.
The fog's coming in again.
Captain, cell number 72 has reversed itself. The storage batteries are going out.
Well, rip up the battery decks and get those jumpers across. I'll hold her speed down as low as possible.
Right, Skipper.
Take her down to 100 feet.
Captain, to periscope. Destroyer bearing down on us full speed.
Let me look. Forget the batteries. Full speed. Take her down, Lou. Take her down. Crash dive. Crash dive.
Captain, cut it out.
We moved down in a hurry. Whatever Lou was saying in Cantonese did the trick. Luck was with us. But we'd had a lifetime of luck in the past 20 minutes. It couldn't last forever. And it didn't. A sheet of blue flame shot through the boat. It followed the hull plates and flashed wherever moisture had collected. It made a blue halo around the sweaty faces of the men. It didn't seem hot. No one was burned. But the Chinese crew screamed in terror. Hydrogen. Hydrogen given off by the storage batteries. Something had touched it off before enough could build up to make a human bomb out of all of us. Now we had a surface, but we couldn't. Destruction was up there in the form of a Jap destroyer. Destruction down here. Hydrogen. Suddenly, I glanced at the depth gauge. We were coming up. The bombing planes, paralyzed with fear, had frozen the controls on hard rise. Get her down, Lou! Get her down!
I am trying, Captain. He doesn't understand.
Chinto, let him! We're breaking surface, Captain.
I cannot free the man from the controls, Captain.
Captain, two periscopes. Destroyer bearing down.
The impact threw all of us to the deck. I got back up in time to see water gushing down through the conning tower hatch. A direct hit. A superstructure destroyed. Close all watertight doors. Secure the hatches.
Captain, the lights. The lights are gone out.
The circuit breaker's knocked out.
Switch out the emergency lights. Young, can you work on the circuit breakers?
Aye, aye, sir. We're getting water in the torpedo room.
Never mind that, man. Help Young with the circuit breakers.
Aye, aye, sir.
The crew, Captain. They're very frightened. The lights
are on. Lou, what's our depth?
150 feet, Captain. We are sinking rapidly.
Hard rise on the bow and stern planes.
The circuit breakers are okay, Skipper, but the pumps can't handle this water.
We'll take charge of the air manifold, Jimmy. Blow out a little of number two main ballast.
Aye, aye, Captain.
200 feet, Captain. We are going down too fast, Captain. 225 feet, Captain.
No, Captain. Wait, no, we are rising at 200 feet.
Captain, I do not understand.
175 feet, we are rising rapidly.
Man. Let a little air out of the ballast tank.
Then what is happening? First we are too deep, then we move up too swiftly.
It's the water inside the boat. It rushes forward, and we dive, then back aft, and we go up.
Still coming up, Captain. 100 feet.
It's no use, Skipper. The pump can't handle the weight fast enough.
You sure the Kingston valves are open in the main ballast tank?
Yes, sir.
50 feet, Captain. Nearing surface.
Well, we'll have to take our chances on the surface, man. Blow all main ballast.
Blow all main ballast, Captain.
Captain.
What is it, Warren?
The crew, they don't understand what is happening. Water is filling ship.
Well, we'll be surfaced in 2 minutes.
But they have taken the knives from the ship's galley. They are crazed with fear.
Hold them off, I tell you. We're nearing surface.
Periscope there, Captain.
Oh, never mind that. We'll take her up to the surface.
We're okay, Skipper. We're coming up.
Captain, listen to me. These poor farmers know nothing of submarines. They must be stopped.
Skipper, they're going for the hatch.
Warren, stop them. We're not surfaced yet.
Nearing surface, Captain.
And pull them back, Captain.
Captain, the water's pouring in on the batteries, so it's tracing close above the hatches.
Surface, Captain.
Skipper, the batteries, the salt water's pouring onto the batteries.
Captain,
What is this green gas?
Long, long, pass the word for all hands to abandon ship.
Hold your law, hold your law.
Yeah, but if that chlorine gets to us, we're finished. Let's get out of here. Okay, where's Young? I don't know. He was in a Chinese mob a few minutes ago. Skip and a chlorine spread.
Yeah.
Let's get Young. Follow me.
Skip, I don't. Skip a look. Young.
Young.
A meat cleaver buried in his skull. He's dead, Skip.
Well, he better stop that mob. He got that for his efforts.
Let's get out of here, Skip.
Yeah, you're right, Jimmy. We can't help Young. This way. You okay, Jimmy?
Sure thing, Skip.
Those poor devils forgot to take their life jackets.
We can't help them, Skipper. They brought it on themselves.
Captain. Captain, you all right?
Yeah, all right, Warren. Where's Lou?
I don't know. We can still save the ship, can't we, Skipper? It's the gas that drove us out.
Three men can rub a sub. Warren, the escort belongs to your country. We leave her this way, she might drift into the hands of the Japs.
My country needs a submarine. We have so few weapons.
Well, it's you and man and me. Do you think we can save her?
No. You have done your best, Captain. It's for you to decide.
All right. Man, take the forward hatches. Wong, you take aft. We're going to scuttler. We scuttled the S-boat. Wong, man, and myself. Then we drifted apart in the black, muddy Yangtze River. I looked back just once to see my boat go down steadily by the stern. She was a pig iron wench of uncertain antecedents, but she'd been all mine, and she met her end like a lady. The last thing I remembered was the black water in the night. When I regained consciousness, I was aboard a Chinese fishing junk. And with the fish, I was delivered the following day to Ningpo.
Enough, gentlemen. You must contain your emotions. This man, this American, must be tried fairly.
As fairly as he has sunk our submarine. Do not forget that, worthy one.
You have heard his story. It is now up to us to believe it.
But you haven't heard my story. You've kept me locked up in your filthy jail for 2 days. You haven't let me wire my government. You haven't let me
please,
do it.
Please, please, Lieutenant. You are making this most unpleasant. Indeed, we have listened to your strange tale. You yourself have admitted ordering our noble submarine to be sunk.
Yeah, but what about the rest of it? The Jap battleship we sunk in the cruiser?
Surely, Lieutenant, you are not still portraying yourself in this ridiculous, heroic fantasy.
But I tell you, we sunk them, a battleship and a cruiser. Then we were forced to abandon ship. Ask the Japanese. They'll tell you we got two of their major ships before they got us.
Surely, Lieutenant, you are not so naive as to believe that our enemy, the Japanese, would admit to this, even if it were true. Tell your distinguished superiors, these gentlemen gathered here, just who saw these imagined sinkings?
I did. And so did Wong, my first officer, Lieutenant Wong. He saw them, both of them.
Ah, so there was someone else. And pray, tell us then, where is Lieutenant Wong?
I don't know. He drifted away from me during the night.
He drifted away from you during the night. I believe we may now weigh the evidence. The crime is treason against the government of China. Gentlemen, how do you find this man? You see, Lieutenant, you deserve the maximum penalty. Death tomorrow morning before the firing squad. However, we are all too aware of your American citizenship. Therefore, we shall suspend this sentence under one condition, that you leave at once and never return to China again. Is so?
So
So I left China. My $1,000 a month salary, my bonus now worth $100,000, the unofficial Mr. Lee, I saw none of it or him. In the end, I was glad to be alive and to have discovered that I had my belly full of submarines for life.
Under the direction of Norman McDonald, Escape has brought you Up Periscope by Alec Hudson, especially adapted for radio by William Frug, and starring Hi Everback. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell and Edgar Berrier, with Lou Krugman, Ben Wright, Byron Kane, and Charles Lung. The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens.
Next week, Escape with us to England and the story of an innocent man caught up in a murderous web of international intrigue, as Jeffrey Household tells it in his exciting new novel, A Rough Shoot.
A dramatic milestone on Broadway Playhouse tomorrow night and most of these same CBS stations. It's The Petrified Forest, starring Wendell Corey in the noted Robert E. Sherwood drama of romantic adventure. For a listening treat, be sure not to miss The Petrified Forest on CBS Radio tomorrow night. It's a sparkling addition to Broadway Playhouse's long list of outstanding dramatic productions. This is Roy Rowan speaking. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Another underwater tale from Escape.
Blub, blub, blub.
Hey, maybe I may be mistaken, but William Frug, who was producer, was he not at least in, like, the later seasons of Twilight Zone, a producer for Twilight Zone?
I'll say yes.
I'm thinking I've never seen his name on the credits.
Yeah, there you go. I have no evidence that points otherwise. Sure, why not? Yeah.
Survey says.
Yes.
Survey says, why not? Okay, okay.
There you go.
Well, we must learn something from this tale of depths.
The depths of tales.
Must we?
must.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
The fine print in every contract is fine for a reason.
Who knew? Who knew?
Well, the guy signed up to do this, 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 and this, and then finally they brought him onto the carpet, and he had nothing. So always read the fine print.
Always read the fine print, yes.
Always.
We have one more tale to go, Dale.
That we do. This one's what? Cavalcade of America.
Cavalcade of America. And if we have time and keep it tight, we might have time for a little Eerie House special feature.
Oh, good heavens, no.
Oh, yes.
Anything in your mind you want to discuss?
No.
Back in 1814, there was this guy on a horse. No, go ahead.
No. We got. It's a new Eerie House classic.
It is. Let's get to Cavalcade of America then. This will be part one of a tale called Take Her Down.
And the date is? October 30th, 1944.
Okay.
Presenting Clark Gable in Take Her Down, with Walter Houston as Cavalcade's commentator on the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by E.I. DuPont, the Nemours and Company, maker of better things for better living through chemistry. Before we begin our play tonight, we want to tell you about DuPont Speed Easy Wall Finish, the wall paint that is making history in home decoration. Speed Easy is an oil-type paint, but you thin it with water before you apply it to your walls. It covers soiled, dingy wallpaper as well as most other interior wall surfaces in one easy coat. It makes your rooms bright and cheery with a smooth, velvety finish. Speed Easy won't rub off because it dries in an hour to an oil-type finish. It comes in 11 soft pastel shades. It's speedy and easy. It's Speed Easy, made by DuPont. Tonight in Cavalcade's fall series of great stars and great radio plays, the DuPont Company presents Clark Gable as Submarine Commander Howard Gilmore in Take Her Down. And now, to raise the curtain on this evening's play, here is your Cavalcade commentator, Walter Houston.
Good evening. Tonight on Cavalcade, we have the honor and privilege of welcoming the return to the entertainment world of one of America's most distinguished motion picture stars. Tonight, Clark Gable makes his first radio appearance since his release from active duty with the United States Army Air Forces. It would take many words for me to tell you of the respect and affection we of the entertainment world have for Clark Gable. And you who have enjoyed so much his fine screen portrayals know, too, the record of his part in the world at war. We are glad to have Clark Gable with us in a story on tonight's Cavalcade of America, the story of a man, a story that in a few short months became a legend. The story of Submarine Commander Howard Gilmore and the words he spoke before he died. Take her down, he said. But legends are made by living men. And so this is the story of a man. It is told by those who knew and loved him best when he was alive, his wife and the men of his command, what each saw best and loved him for, the many-sided picture of what a man must be to ascend into immortality reserved for heroes. The DuPont Company presents Clark Gable as Commander Howard Gilmore in Take Her Down, written by Norman Rosten and Robert L. Richards on the Cavalcade of America.
He was my husband. It's hard for me to think of him or remember him as anything but that. I always knew he was a brave man. And strong, because he had strength enough for both of us whenever mine failed. It did sometimes, when he went away and I didn't know when he was ever coming back. It was like that when I saw him off on that last trial run. I'd gone down to see his new command, and we were standing there looking at her just before he went aboard.
Well, there she is. What do you think of her? Beauty, huh?
She's a beautiful ship. Do you call a submarine a ship?
No, darling. You call her a boat. My boat. I'm her skipper.
Yes, she is beautiful.
She's more than that, though. She's got power. Power like a healthy young animal. You can see it in her lines, too.
Darling, is it true that a skipper loves his boat more than he loves his wife?
Well, it's not true about this skipper.
Howard, I've tried not to think about it, but I've got to ask you.
Sure.
How long this time?
I don't know, darling. Sealed orders. Not very long, though.
Sealed orders? Sealed under the sea, so far from home. I try not to be afraid, Howard, but when I sit alone at night and look at the map, it seems that you're lost in an endless world of water.
I'm never lost.
Are you sure?
I always know where I am. I always know where my home port is. I always know where you are.
Now there's all this talk about war in the Pacific.
I love you very much, Hilda.
Up to now, we've been so lucky. What if...
Look, Mrs. Skipper, no ifs. I'm coming back. Remember that, will you?
All right. I'll remember.
In 8 weeks at the latest. And I want you to be right here, on this very spot, see?
I'll be waiting.
All right, then. You see that you are, because I'll be waiting, too.
My name's McCabe.
I've never served under him before, but to me, he'll always be the best natural-born leader of men I've ever known. He was like a great football coach. He had a genius for getting men to work together as a team. That's half the battle on a sub. Because at first, the sub crew is just a bunch of men thrown together inside an iron eggshell. Somebody's got to make a team out of them. Nobody in the world can do it but their skipper. You find out about a man pretty quick that way. I did. The whole crew did.
Hey, cut the potato whistle a minute, can't you, Doug? I'm trying to read.
So you're trying to read.
No, this is important. Listen. Anyone stranded on a beach or shore should find an abundant supply of food on the beach at low tide. Eating a turtle's egg is relatively simple. Bite a hole in one end of the elastic shell and squeeze the contents into the mouth.
Hey, what's the name of that book, Professor?
How to Survive in the South Pacific Islands.
I can hardly wait.
Yeah? Well, this big boat routine's no picnic, you know. You can get in trouble in these things. You know that, don't you?
What are you squawking about? You enlisted.
What does that crack mean?
Anything you want to make...
Listen, you...
Pipe down here, you pipe down. What's the trouble?
Oh, the boys are just having a little argument about the dangers of submarine warfare.
Getting a little jumpy, huh? The skipper will take that out of you. He's the right kind of a skipper.
What do you mean, the right kind of a skipper?
You'll find out, son. We're heading for the test grounds now. I'm going to run a rock channel through reefs. Submerged.
Submerged, huh? Suppose we don't make it.
We make it. Or else. Gangway. Here's the skipper.
Carry on. I just want to say a couple of things. This isn't going to be a speech. We're all down here together now, and we're going to have to work together from here on out. We'll sort of get acquainted and find out about each other as we go along. Our job is to make the best possible combination with all the human material that we add up to between us. I guess Chief McCabe has told you our first job. We're running a channel submerged. I won't say it isn't dangerous, it is. But it isn't half as dangerous as what we may be up against later. Because don't forget, we're training for war. If and when. It's a job, that's all. Just take it easy and you'll be all right. Any questions? At your stations.
It's awful quiet.
Yeah. A little noise, but help. Or if you could see something.
Pipe down, you guys.
Give us a position as soon as you can, Jane.
Aye, aye, sir. Gee, when you think about all those rocks out there, sort of
just
makes you...
don't think about it.
According to our navigation fix, Skipper, we're at the entrance of the channel now. Course 245 should carry us through. Okay. Steer 245.
245. Aye, aye. Steady on 245, Skipper.
Watch your depth, Davis. This channel's tricky. Reefs and tides.
We're at 63 feet now, Skipper. Good control.
What speed, Wagner?
Pit log show 3 knots, sir.
Are we at the turning point, Jade?
About a minute.
All ahead, standard speed. McCabe, right 5 degrees rudder. Let her swing slowly.
Aye, aye. Rudder is right 5 degrees. Swinging slowly.
Bring her up 50 feet. Up periscope. Here's a set of bearings, Jade. See how they plot. Bishop Rock, 342. Right tangent on bluff, 087. Tall spire, 245. Down periscope.
We're right in position, in the channel.
What's your course, McCabe?
260, sir.
Steady her up.
We're losing depth control, sir. The current's throwing us. Being forced up, sir.
All ahead, emergency. Hard dive on both planes.
Got it now, Skipper. Control all right.
Clearing the channel now, Skipper. All ahead, two-thirds speed. Up periscope. Steady as you go. Watch your depth carefully.
Danger bearing passed. All ahead standard. We're clear. We're through.
We made it.
Boy, on a
to me, Commander Gilmore was an Iron Man, that's what he was. He put us through hoops like I've never been through before or since, but he's a real skipper. There was nothing he dished out he couldn't take himself, and more. And when he got tough, and he could be plenty tough, every man aboard knew why. Not just to show his authority, but to teach us something that someday might save the lives of all of us. We didn't know then how right he was. There was a time during crash dive practice. I was standing watch on the bridge. We were surfaced at night.
Wonder how long we keep this up, Red.
Until he figures we can do it right, I guess.
I'm too tired right now to do anything right.
Gee, it's pretty night, Phil.
Yeah.
There it is.
Clear the bridge. Go ahead, pull.
Let's go, boys.
Down the hatch on the double.
Here it is. Closer.
All ahead, one third. Pulls all vents. Level off 60 feet.
Hold it. Hold it.
Aye, sir.
Too slow. You're too slow. Now listen to me, all of you. Come over here. For the last time, when I say crash dive, I mean crash dive. When I say take her down, I mean take her down. Can't you understand that 5 seconds can mean the difference between getting down and being blown out of the water? We're not playing a game here. This is life and death. I will do it again.
Some of the men are pretty tired, sir.
What's that?
Nothing, sir.
Of course they're tired. We're all tired. But we're not going to quit until we've got it.
Excuse me, sir, but here's a radio message. You ought to see it right away, sir.
Let's have it. Well, men, I guess we won't be doing any more training tonight after all. The Japanese have just attacked Pearl Harbor.
Dirty love.
We're at war. What?
Excuse me. Pardon me. I have something stuck in my throat.
A submarine? What?
No, a stick.
A stick?
A steak.
A steak?
A steak.
A sticky stick? A sticky steak.
A steak.
Yes.
You want
hey,
help?
Quick,
long
quick
story.
Quick fun fact about Clark Gable, who's in our program. One, he didn't do a whole lot of radio that wasn't redoing a movie. Actually, in 1918, Clark Gable grew bored of life at his farm life in rural Pomara, and he came to nearby Akron against his father's wishes. He dropped out of school and headed to start anew. He worked as a clerk at the Firestone plant before moving to the Miller Tire and Rubber Company. He rented a room from a couple on Snyder Avenue, a short walk from work. Let's see. One night after the factory, Clark went to the Akron Music Hall, saw a performance of The Bird of Paradise. It was a night that changed the course of his entire life. Seeing the performance was all it took for Clark to want to become an actor. Persistent Clark started running errands for the company, sweeping the stage. Anything he could do to be part of the company. Finally, he appeared on stage for the first time as a spear carrier in a one-night performance. The Akron Music Hall was there at East Exchange. It's, I think where the old Beacon Journal is, but they're not there now. So anyway, he got a start from there. Soon after the theater company left town, Clark went to join his father in an oil rig in Oklahoma and never returned to his home state of Ohio. There you go.
Dave, my takeaway from that is that it's everyone's father's wish that their kid never go to Akron. That was my takeaway from all
could
that.
Be.
Could
be.
Could be.
You don't know how right you are. You don't know how right you are. Sorry, Akron, but...
Hey.
Sorry, Parma. Parma.
No, Palmyra. Palmyra.
Palmyra?
Yeah.
Elvira? Parma?
No, Palmyra was where he was from, but they were okay.
Oh.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Palmyra?
I said Parma.
Palmyra. Okay.
And so, Yeah, all kinds of fun stuff happening on that ship. I tell you. There it is.
Oh, we finally found karma.
Sucker was stuck, man.
Was it? That was a rough going karma, I tell you.
Oh, you boy. There we go. That's enough of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's wrap up our tale.
Cavalcade.
Take her down from Cavalcade of America, so that we have time for some more shenanigans. We'll be back after this.
I'll always think of him as a scrapper. Somehow, the skipper reminded you of a thoroughbred hunting dog. Once he caught the trail, nothing in the world could shake him. He never thought of the danger. You'd just see that old light in his eye, and you'd know he was thinking about the excitement, the chase, the kill. And we'd all catch the spirit from him. After Pearl Harbor, we went hunting for keeps. We were heading for a Jap harbor in the South Pacific, running submerged and hot on the trail.
Aren't we in yet?
Ought to be any minute, Skipper.
We got a hunch we're going to draw our first blood today.
I sure hope that's what it is. I know something's going to happen.
Keep your ear to that sound detector, Shape.
Aye, sir. He's like a kid that's just hooked his first fish.
Hey, listen.
You getting it?
I think so.
Yeah, that's it.
Sound operator picking up the fellow, Skipper.
A periscope. A periscope, sir.
Oh, brother. Look at this. We're right smack in the middle of their harbor. Here, Davis, tell me if I'm counting right.
Jap destroyers. One, two, three big ones.
Range, 6,000 yards. Angle on the bow, 30 port.
Destroyers aren't very healthy for subs, if we're...
Three in a line. We'll have to get away fast, but we've got them. Boy, we've got them.
You have to creep in a bit for range. Water's as flat as a lake. Ticklish.
Sure it is. But we can't leave those babies sitting there. We can't. Forward torpedo room. Make ready bow tubes.
Tubes ready forward, sir.
All ahead. One third. Slowly. Watch your depth control, Davis.
Control all right, sir.
Zero. One, three.
Zero. One, three.
Zero, two, zero.
Zero, two, zero.
Zero, one, zero.
Zero, one, zero.
Stand by forward. Fire one.
One fired, sir.
Bearing 359.
Set up on number two. Fire two.
Two fired, sir.
Set up on third. Angle on bow, 70 port.
Bearing 345.
Fire three.
Three fired, sir.
There's one.
One Jap destroyer in the air.
There's two.
Two Jap destroyers in the air.
Hit on the third.
Good hit on the third.
Down periscope. Well, Davis, what do you think now, huh?
I think it's time to retire gracefully, Skipper.
Okay. Let's call it two down and Tokyo to go.
You're listening to Clark Gable as Commander Howard Gilmore in Take Her Down on the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by E.I. DuPont, De Nemours and Company, maker of better things for better living through chemistry. And now as we continue our play, here is your Cavalcade commentator, Walter Houston.
This is the story of Submarine Commander Howard Gilmore and the events which preceded his historic order to take her down. The story, based on official naval records, is told by those who loved him and knew him best, his wife, and the men of the submarine crew who served under him.
Commander Gilmore was the kindest, gentlest, squarest man I ever knew. You could feel about him the way you do about your father when you're a little boy, or about a priest. There's no picnic on a submarine. Oh, there's excitement, but there's the strain. It's with you all the time. There's nothing you can do about it. Maybe I was different or something, but it finally got to me. I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't think straight. They confined me to quarters. I was in my bunk, just lying there, not seeing anything, not thinking about anything.
In here?
Yes, sir.
I'll see him alone.
Aye, aye, sir.
Wilson? Yes, sir.
How are you feeling?
I'm all right, sir. I'll be all right.
Sure you will.
Just sort of gone to pieces, I guess. Sorry.
I know. Wilson, you like to read, don't you?
Yes, sir.
I've got a book you might like. Biography of Abraham Lincoln by Carl Sandburg.
I've heard about it.
Now, I was reading a story in there the other day. One of the stories that Lincoln used to tell about the two boys going into battle, and one said to the other, say, I think you're scared. And the other one said, you're darn right I'm scared. And if you were half as scared as I am, you'd have run long ago. You're scared, aren't you?
Yes, sir. I guess I am.
Well, that's nothing to be ashamed of. Plenty of brave men before you have been scared.
This is different. It keeps following me like a torpedo coming at us in the dark. I can't sleep. I try. All I can think about is home.
Look, son, we're all scared, a little. Anybody who tells you he isn't is either a liar or there's something wrong with him. I know you see me or Lieutenant Davis going about our business, and maybe we look to you as though we didn't have a care in the world. But I'm scared lots of times. I get lonely, too, and think about home. It's one of those things about war that nobody talks about much and most people don't even hear about. Fear. But they're afraid, too, don't forget. The Japs and the Germans. Maybe that's what war all comes down to. Us hanging on and them hanging on until they're more scared than we are, and they show it and we know it. And then it's over. And the war is won. See what I mean?
Yes, sir.
So just hang on. Take it easy. You'll be all right.
Yes, sir. I know I will. Now.
I'll send you around that book. Good night.
Good night. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
I saw him die. It wasn't just a skipper being killed in action. That happens all too often in our kind of war. It was choosing to die. That's what you've got to try to understand, if you can. Choosing to die. We were cruising on the surface. The skipper was catching a nap in the conning tower. I was on deck with a watch. It was dusk. The sun had just gone down.
Say, Lieutenant Davis, look out there, starboard.
What about it?
Thought I saw something like a shadow, starboard. I don't see anything.
Must be your imagination.
Yeah. I guess it was a cloud. Kind of foggy out there.
Say, wait a minute.
There is something out there.
Hey, it's a ship.
Ship sighted off starboard beam, coming by fast.
Man your battle stations. Make ready all tubes. All ahead emergency.
What's up, Lieutenant? Jap radar on it. Going by as parallel off starboard, looks like.
Hard to see. Black out.
Better get the skipper.
Yes, right behind you, David.
Radar off starboard, skipper.
No time to submerge. She's coming by on a straight line. Keep left full rudder, Gabe.
Left full rudder, sir.
We'll bear left and swing for a shot with our stern tubes.
She spotted us, sir. She's zigzagging. She's turning in on us.
She's going to try to ram us. Sound the collision alarm.
What are you going to do, skipper?
Only one thing to do. Left full rudder. All ahead, full.
Left full rudder. All ahead, full.
We'll never get a torpedo shot at her now, bow or stern tubes.
Davis, we're going to have to ram her.
She's a big ship, sir.
I hate to do it, even if we get away with it. We'll crumple our bow like a paper bag, but it's ram or be ram.
Yes, you're right.
Circle the ram.
Beginning circle, sir.
We can catch her with her bow away.
She's coming in fast, skipper.
Try to throw her off a bit. Right, full rudder. All stop.
Right, full rudder. All stop, sir.
Left, full rudder. All ahead, full.
Left, full rudder. All ahead, full, sir.
All ahead, emergency. Looks like we got there first. Hold fast. Here it comes.
We've ripped her open, sir. She's listening. We better pull out fast.
Hey, the Brits. Stand by to dive.
There's her light. Watch out.
Hurry, get below. Keep your head down.
Skipper. Skipper.
I'm hit, Davis. Take her down.
Let me help you, skipper.
Now there's no time. I'm hit. It's me or the ship. Take her down.
I won't leave you here.
I said take her down. That's an order. Do you hear me? Take her down.
Aye, sir.
Close hatch. Submerge.
The skipper.
Where are you going?
He's on the bridge, sir.
The hatch is shut tight.
Let me go. He's out there. We can't leave him, sir.
Skipper's orders. Take her down. Orders. Do you hear me? Down.
Down. Aye, aye, sir.
Call out your depths.
50 feet. 55. 60.
Our Father, who art in heaven.
65.
Thy kingdom come.
70.
Thy will be done.
75.
As it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us.
Gable and other members of tonight's Cavalcade cast, our thanks. In a moment, Claude Gable will return to the microphone, but first, here is Gayne Whitman speaking for the DuPont Company with the most interesting story about how nylon is being used by our jungle fighters.
Because of its greater durability, light weight, and freedom from mildew, the War Department is now replacing the cotton mosquito netting for jungle hammocks with nylon. Right now, the nylon nets are used only in jungle areas where the mosquitoes are bad. But eventually, the Army will fit all jungle hammocks with nylon nets. When American soldiers first went into the jungles of the South Pacific, they used a sleeping hammock with a canopy of regular mosquito netting, with a net hanging down to the ground on either side. That way, they thought, insects wouldn't be able to make their way into the hammocks. But what happened was something different. Unbelievable as it may seem, termites ate their way right up the netting to the hammock and then across the hammock so fast that they cut across it like a pair of scissors in one night. A soldier would go to sleep in his hammock, and about 4 o'clock in the morning there would be a plop, and he'd land, bedding and all, in a mud hole. So, after experiments with different materials, quartermaster technicians developed nylon mosquito netting. Termites don't eat nylon, and it has many other advantages. It resists mold. It dries out quickly after getting soaked by tropical rains, just as nylon stockings dry quickly. It's mildew-proof. It weighs less than cotton, and it has a tensile strength nearly twice as great. The Army uses nylon mountain climbing ropes and glider tow ropes, nylon jungle boots and boot laces, nylon mountain tents, nylon ponchos, quilted nylon sleeping bags, and nylon toothbrush bristles, among other things. Nylon is being used in ever greater quantities in the manufacture of equipment for American soldiers. At present, the Quartermaster Corps is purchasing nylon for at least 8 different items because it is the best material which can be found for them. Each requires a certain quality or qualities which nylon imparts to it. Each is a vital article of warfare. Nylon is one of the DuPont Company's better things for better living through chemistry. Now, here's Cavalcade's commentator, Walter Houston.
My friend Clark Gable has something on his mind about a certain girl that all of you know. Clark?
Ladies and gentlemen, if a paper hanger in a gang of international murderers hadn't come along, this certain girl tonight might be getting a small boy in his clothes ready for kindergarten in the morning, or packing lunch for a husband on the swing shift. But this girl and countless like her put aside the gingham house dress or the wedding dress, not just to wait, but to wait and to work in the uniform of the Army nurse. She's an average American girl, this Army nurse. She used to be the cashier in your local restaurant, the secretary at your local bank, the girl who said, "Number, please," when you picked up your phone. War came and she left a world of typewriters and shopping and Saturday night dances and gardenias and dinner dates and turned to the battlefronts. And from Bataan to the Siegfried Line, she's been in there stopping wounded men from taking the final step to death, leading them back to health and a new will to go on. Tonight, we'd like to place our deepest respects at the feet of every Army nurse at home and abroad, a real American girl, the same kind of girl who stood beside her man and her country since 1776.
Thank you, Clark. Next week's cavalcade stars the lovely and distinguished actress Loretta Young. Our cavalcade play, Jane Addams, Woman of Courage, is the unusual and dramatic story of a woman who sacrificed home, friends, and romance, all for one idea. That was to improve the conditions of the underprivileged, the disinherited of our great cities. She succeeded, but not until she had won over calloused, hard-bitten political bosses. We hope you will be with us next Monday evening when Loretta Young stars as Jane Addams on the Cavalcade of America. Thank you, and good evening.
This is Gayne Whitman sending best wishes from Cavalcade sponsor, E.I. DuPont, Dinamores & Company of Wilmington, Delaware, who invites you to be with us again next week for Loretta Young in Woman of Courage. Right.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Want to thank C.W. Fogsbane, GGSA Paper, good old Bob, Rob Smith for joining live in the chat. And the only way I can thank you is probably more of a punishment, really.
Here we go.
That's right. Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Practice, everybody. You can't rewrite famous last words. There you go.
There you go. Well, you did it, Dale. You made sure we couldn't get in the special feature.
No, we got too long?
Well, there's 3 minutes left.
We got 4 minutes.
All right. I got 3 minutes. Let's try it.
Where's it at? I'm feeling lonesome.
Are you lonesome tonight? Do you miss me tonight? Are you sorry I split you apart? I know I am.
Does your memory stray to that dark, stormy day when I zapped you and made you my sweetheart?
Does your rack in your dungeons seem empty and bare? Do you gaze at your doorstep? See me flying there.
Is your heart filled with pain?
Shall I stab you again?
Tell me, dear,
are you lonesome tonight?
I wonder if you're lonesome tonight. That would be painful.
You know, someone once said that all the world's a stage.
And each must be a bat. Must play a part.
Fate had me playing a monster with you as my sweetheart.
Act one was when we met. I loved you at first stab.
You screamed your lines so cleverly and never missed a cue.
Then came Act Two. You seemed to change and you acted strange.
Why you never did want to go to the blood bank, I'll never know.
But you lied when you said you loved me.
So I plucked out your eyes so you could see what you were saying.
But I'd rather go on hearing your lies.
Because I cut off your lips, too.
Then go on not living without you.
And now the stage is bare, and I'm standing there with blood on my hands.
And if you won't come back to me in pieces,
then make them bring the coffin lid down.
Does the blood fill your veins?
Shall I bite you again?
Tell me, dear.
Are you lonesome
tonight?
China. Star Wars Submarine Fun, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and some Jack Benny. Sorry,
yep.
No time for Vincent Price. We'll just see you tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern. Oh, my neck. Oh.
Your neck.
Yes, it hurts, dude. I'm not kidding you. It's like black and blue. There's a square, like, puncture wound thing. It could have been, like, horribly comical.
Or just plain horrible, yeah.
Well, yeah.
You're just in between the two there.
Yeah, the more you describe it, the more comical it gets. It's crazy.
Well,
just
I have to admit, Denise chuckled a little bit.
Yeah. Honey, I've impaled myself. Hello. Coming to the house. I'm bleeding all over, but it's okay.
No, it didn't bleed a lot. Just like a surface thing, but it punctured into my neck. Wow.
It bruised well. Yeah, that's what you had.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to be a fun night. Going to be a
yeah,
fun night.
Don't expect too much sleep tonight.
Oh, hey, you haven't, Ben. I'm still recovering from burns.
Yeah.
So I think it's time to light myself on fire.
When did this occur?
What, the neck thing? This
yeah.
afternoon.
Oh, okay.
This afternoon. I was rummaging through the garden
for
cucumbers,
rummages?
Tomatoes, things
oh.
like that, peppers. I was rooting around, so I was stepping over the chicken wire fence and caught my foot. Went plumbing neck first into a wooden stake.
Yeah.
I was stunned. I was like, what? Oh, I'm alive. Cool.
Yeah.
It didn't feel good.
I hope you feel better soon.
That's
just horrible. So I mean, I don't know if you're going anywhere or we're going anywhere this weekend, but that kind of puts a kibosh on all that, right?
No, I'm not, you know, I still got to do my groceries and stuff tomorrow. I'm alive.
Oh, okay.
But if you eat them, will it fall through your neck or what? A flop in your neck you just made.
That's why I kept telling Denise. I'm going to peel it open. Tell me if you can see my food going down. It'll be cool.
Oh, yeah. Yummy.
Yes,
yummy.
Gross.
I know. It's black and blue. I just must have fell the right way where it didn't like do anything really bad. It just hurts like hell. and my burns are healing at the same time. This will be fun. I'm going through aloe vera like there's no tomorrow.
Why? What did aloe vera do to you?
Yeah. I recall years ago I was playing with dog number two out in the backyard. And and we were running. And the only thing about playing with your dog out in the backyard is you really don't know where they're going to go. And so, of course, we were running, and it was fun and all that. And then he took a right turn and like, crossed my path. And I immediately was like, okay, we're going down. And I ended up bruising my ribs. And it was over the Christmas and New Year's was painful. Bruised ribs. Not fun.
Yep. Yeah. You bounce back from this stuff a lot quicker when you're young.
Exactly. Exactly. I was like, really? And I even recall slightly trying to roll with the fall. But
yes.
Know.
Yes, it's better than fighting it. Roll with it.
I am no acrobat, but I did what I could.
Yep.
It didn't help. I was like, "Ooh, let's roll like a stunt guy," and it's like, "You are no stunt guy." You know,
I used
really
to get
cool.
injured doing dumb stuff as a young guy. As an old guy, I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of used to this, but I don't want to do this no more. This hurts.
Yeah. Now it's more like, oh, I hurt myself making toast. What the heck is wrong?
not toast. A toaster I'm pretty good with.
I bet something's going to happen. Next week we're going to roll in here. Guys,
I
could
even
toast.
Make toast while taking a bath. I'll bet.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I bet I could.
Next time we get together, be like,
what
guys, I was making toast.
What
all went downhill
go
from
wrong?
There.
What could possibly
I have no
go
idea.
Wrong?
I would say stay away from the toaster until you get better. until you get over your current wounds, toast.
I think I'm going to avoid everything. Although I will be playing with fire on Sunday. Kids are coming
Dave
over.
And
gotta,
I have been
gotta
on the phone. Dave and I have been on the phone enough now that he knows that if the smoke alarm goes off that in the Gar household, that means toast is done. That's
like a little dark to
alarm.
You?
No, not necessarily. It's not that. It's just I have a very sensitive smoke alarm or a very small kitchen or both. And we'll be talking, and it's like, oh, beep, beep, beep. And Dave says, oh, toast is done.
Your toast is ready.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that toaster. but every time.
Toasters
I have
last forever. Seem to last forever. Though
you would think, but
I've never bought a bad toaster.
I have a problem of I'll make the toast, I'll put the toast in there, I'll put it down, and then I wander away, and then I'll be in the other end of the house. Beep 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 beep. Oh, what did I do? Oh toast. Oh right. Oh toast.
Who's at the door?
Toast, yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Beep beep beep
beep beep beep beep. Beep. Toast is done. oh, boy. Good old toast. So yeah, you might not want to make toast. You'll make
people
toast.
People used to make toast in the oven or on the stove. They even had little stands that would go over the burners.
A little pyramid.
In the old days.
Yeah. Little triangular looking wire contraption. Yeah.
Yes.
And before that, they have one that you put into the fire because you used to cook it in a fireplace.
There you go.
But you always burned your toast you always burned your toast on that one.
Yep.
I think burned bread is the direction you're going with toast. So yeah.
I always liked my toast a little dark.
Right.
A little crusty.
See what's going to happen, Dale, is you're going to say, "Well, I was making toast." And I was going to spread the butter, and it fell, and I slipped, and I broke my hip. And, oh, man, it's just great. I was making toast, and.
It could happen to me. It could happen to me.
You never know. You never know. You know. Next time we get together. What happened to Dale? Part 7.
I don't know. I'm ready to buy a Nerf suit.
No, just get a nurse. There you go.
Yes.
Well, isn't the missus of yours, isn't she a nurse? Or
no,
is she turning
into
one because of your injuries? It's
she might have to be my wet nurse.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
That's
hello.
Something different.
No,
hello.
I just, yeah.
Well, I hope you heal up, man. That is not good.
It's just not good.
I got stuck. What was it? Two or three weeks ago. All of a sudden, I couldn't walk, and I was like, "What?" And you know, it's like, "What's going on?"
Yeah.
It was later understood that arthritis affected one of my ankles. It's like arthritis. Are you serious? Arthritis? Come on, really?
Can happen.
You have acute arthritis. And I said, what is cute about arthritis?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
You know.
I don't think it's cute at all.
Well, no. Well, they sent me home with some crutches and did they give me pain meds? I can't remember what they did, but there was stuff done.
I don't know.
My recent
adventures are telling me maybe I'd better not get a motorcycle.
Oh, was that your next venture? Oh, I think I'll get a motorcycle. Yeah.
Yeah, well, the son was thinking of getting one. It'd be cool to go riding with him, but...
Yeah. Well, tell the son to get you a sidecar, and you'll ride in that.
I heal too slowly.
Yeah. Get a sidecar. That would be a hoot.
Moped.
No. Well, see, mopeds, that was back when I was in high school. Moped was like, oh, everybody's getting a moped except me. And I was like, well, parents, why not? It's like, because people are hurting themselves on a moped.
Yeah.
I
was more the mini bike. I think we were just before the mopeds, weren't we, Dave?
With the dirt bikes?
The mini bikes were before mopeds.
Yeah. And they were a hoot.
I'd rather have a bicycle at that point.
But over in Europe, the mini scooter bike things, they took off, man. There was like boatloads of those things going on in the 60s. According to the movies I've seen.
I keep seeing these ads on their Facebook, and
for a Vespa.
It is this cool looking bicycle. It looks like a motorcycle kind of, and it's electric powered too or something like that. And it's like only $110 mm-hmm. bucks, normally $400. I'm like, this can't be real, but it looks like it has a tank, but it's very like a miniature tank, and that's where the power is in it. It's got a battery.
Well, I've seen these.
But you
that
pedal
you can
it
get
too.
It.
You pedal it too.
Yeah. No, I've seen those, and it's like it's got like a little motorcycle engine or something you connect to the back tire. So I don't know. At some point, you can pedal it, or you can flip a switch and bim 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 bim. You know, and go your way.
I don't think it sounds like that because it's electric, but.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it would just.
You could only use it on side streets, though. I think it tops out at like 28 miles an hour or something. Nothing crazy.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. Yeah. Well, in the streets here, they have a section on the pavement where it's painted off for bicycles. You
mm-hmm.
know? But yeah. Crazy. Well, I hope you heal up there, man, because that just doesn't.
Well, I'm sure to at some point. I would hope.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more worried about my leg.
Your leg?
Because some of those, I guess, those burns are pretty deep.
Oh, I thought it was your lap. I don't know what you were doing. Okay.
No, the coffee it was on my thigh and on my calf, and my calf got the worst of it because. I guess my sock held the hot coffee in place a long time.
I think you should sue McDonald's.
Yes.
I would. Yes.
I was thinking about McDonald's when it happened.
At the time, yes.
So somehow they're at fault.
They're always at fault.
Somehow they're at fault.
I know it. I just recently read about the getting rid of Ronald McDonald as their spokesperson, and part of the reason for that was because clowns were showing up in neighborhoods and shopping malls, and they were scaring people.
Yeah.
And they didn't want their, you know, and it went even further when the clowns were showing up, and they had some type of a handheld weapon in their hand. And so they wanted to excuse themselves from all that panic and fear, even though McDonald's, they had the McDonald Land House, that helped cancer kids. They had all these different things that the clown did that was positive. All that's gone.
Did you ever see what the original Ronald McDonald looked like? He was kind of creepy.
Yeah, he had a paper cup for a nose, and
that was Willard Scott.
Willard Scott, yes, it was.
Yes.
Willard Scott.
And he had a tray for a hat, and he had McDonald's cheeseburgers as a belt or something. It was really weird.
Yeah.
A far cry just, from the...
But, I mean, even the makeup or something that was creepy about him.
Yeah. Could have been. Although it was Willard Scott under there. I don't know how creepy he could turn into, but maybe yes. Maybe with a yarn wig or something, he would look terrifying. I don't know. This week, in fact, today was Alfred Hitchcock's birthday. Crazy, huh? Friday the 13th.
You
yes.
know, I've
oh,
decided
I meant to
bring
that
I,
up.
I, yeah. You know what I've decided? I've decided when I die, I'm going to stop having birthdays.
Apparently that doesn't work. People are celebrating dead birthdays on Facebook all over the place.
Dead birthdays. You
know. Well, like Alfred Hitchcock, I believe he's dead, but he had a birthday.
Well, rather than saying birthday, commemorating the birth of. Today we'd like to commemorate the birth of the 122nd anniversary of the birth of Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah.
He would have been 122. Holy moly.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy, I tell you.
Now that's scary.
Yep.
And I was looking up something, and somewhere I came across it. Jamie Lee Curtis was born 1958, so she's 6 years older than I. I was like, wow, really? She seems like she's holding it together for her point in time.
I can't do my growl in my throat. It hurts.
Right there. You can file for disability. You lost your growl, due to a yard
my
accident.
My disability from radio.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh yeah, that'll pay a bill. Maybe not.
Maybe. Maybe.
Would that put me in less debt? No.
Depends on how much debt you're in. I don't know.
It's a joke. It's a horror host joke. Horror host
joke.
Notoriously broke.
I think you're just trying to become disabled so you can be a real horror host.
There you go.
Is that the requirement? Is that why I'm a horror host?
Most of the people that Dale knows who are horror hosts, they're disabled in one way or another. Meaning you. That was even before we met you.
Mine is all mental. My disability is all mental. And apparently lately, my equilibrium.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, it's all going away, Dale. In the past, let's just say 6 months, because I don't know, because everything is 2 weeks, right, Dave? Everything happened 2 weeks ago. I want to say in the last 6 months, I was able to ended up with disabled veteran license plates on my car. And apparently you can park in places where other people can't park without paying for free with those plates, supposedly.
Nice.
Yeah. So, yay! Yay for being not upwardly as mobile as others. Gaussian, yeah. So, there's something to it. And I'm a horror host, supposedly, according to some.
I would say you are.
I would say you are.
That's been floating around. I don't know.
Yeah. It's a rumor. You started it, but it's a rumor.
I started all of it. just blur Gaussian. Yay!
Oh, that's what I feel
Selectron. Selectron. Cancel. Selectron. Go away. Oh, what the hell happened? I don't know what I'm doing. Anyway, so, tomorrow should be fun. If all goes well, Horrible Horror will be on twitch.tv.idontknowwhereitis.com to have more fun with that. So we're doing that. If you're still neck unenabled, you could drop by if you wanted to, Dale. Hint, hint. Neck unenabled. I don't know what's happening, but it's all in my neck. Or as they said in Chicken Man, it's all a bad dream. It's all a bad dream.
What? Don't tell me
that.
Chicken Man was all a bad dream? No.
No. There was this thing about his, about the commissioner's secretary lost her mind, jumped on her desk, and started to recite a poem about an Indian. And I can't remember the on the lake of Ichiguma or something. It starts like that. And it,
oh yeah, just something about by the shores of Ichigumi.
By the shores, yeah. That, she got on her desk. She started to recite that over and over. They took her away. They said, "You're crackers," and they sent her to a psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist eerily sounded like Bela Lugosi. He was like, "What is your problem?" And she got up on his desk and started to recite the poem. She's like, "Okay, I need you to lay down. And here is your cure. It's all a bad dream. Say it with me. It's all a bad dream." And you know, it's like, you're fine. It's all a bad dream. It's like, doctor, it's not
it's
a bad
like
dream.
It's like magic.
It's every day this guy comes into the office dressed up like a chicken. It's like, it's all a bad dream. It's like, stop saying it's all a bad dream. It's all a bad dream. Or the number 7, or the color yellow. I forget what it was. There were these certain things that it was going on and on about. But the thing that my biggest pull away was from psychiatry, to be healed, all you have to do is understand it's all a bad dream.
Yeah. Yep.
There you go. From the wisdom of Chicken Man.
sounds like a soundbite we should have, Dale.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
All
yeah,
about
yeah,
all
yeah.
About
yeah.
It's all about dreams.
I will send it to you. I have all of Chicken Man. I will send that to you. Gladly.
I like when you say it. I like when you say it.
It's all a bad dream. Stop saying it's all a bad dream. It's all a bad dream. I don't know. I ran across Chicken Man, and I started playing it here at the house. And at that time, I had a roommate. And the roommate finally came in and was like, "Would you stop playing Chicken Man? It's driving me crazy." Because
well, that's what happened
to him. I had to limit my use of Chicken Man listenings to when the roommate wasn't around. You know?
Now, see, if this was Big Bang Theory, you would say, "Aha! No, I have a Chicken Man clause in your lease." Your lease has a Chicken Man clause.
The short guy with curly hair would go, "What's Chicken Man?" You know. It's like,
I'm glad you asked.
He's the greatest crime finder the world has ever known.
Exactly.
That is
true. There you go. I don't know who he is. Oh, man, that thing is so funny. I don't know who he is.
We'll have to fix that.
Yeah.
We'll learn.
Meanwhile, at the commissioner's office. Oh, the Chicken Man has a chicken cave. He has a cave called the
Chicken
Cave.
He has a
chicken
cave. A chicken
cave.
Yeah,
and one day he got lost in the chicken cave, and he calls up the secretary. "Hello, Miss Hellfinger. This is Chicken Man. I'm lost in my cave."
God.
And she has to help him get out of the cave. Oh, man. It was like...
She couldn't. It was all a bad dream.
It was all a bad dream. Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, you know, there's so many great nuggets in Chicken Man. It's just, wow. For a short-lived series, I mean, you know, it's just. Yeah. And then
there are
some that
stick with you, though, like that. You know what I mean? They're like you said, they're short-lived, but they stick with you. Like, for me, it was It's About Time.
Right. Yeah. The roommate, I remember exactly what it was. There was a part at the end of it, of the end of every Chicken Man, where the announcer comes in and says, "Well," and my roommate was like, I never want to hear that guy say "well" ever again. Well, and then he goes on with some speech or spiel or something, but he always starts "well." Ah, man, poor roommate. I didn't know I was terrorizing anyone. I just thought I was having fun listening. It was all a bad dream.
That's all you had to tell your roommate. That's all you had to tell your roommate.
That was it.
Roommate.
Yeah.
It was all a bad dream.
I wish there was a soundbite of actually Bela Lugosi saying, "It was all a bad dream." That would just be amazing. I would get that set up as my doorbell. Every time someone would ring the door up, "It's all a bad dream." Oh, someone's at the door. you know, something, you know. Every time I turn on my car, it's all a bad dream. Oh, okay, good. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. a ringer for my phone every time someone calls. It's all a bad dream. Oh, the phone's ringing. Yeah, there we go. Because wouldn't it be great if everything was just explained away? It's all a bad dream. Like 2021 and 2020. It's all a bad dream. Yeah, you know. there you go.
It's been something.
Yeah. It's been a bad dream. It's all a bad dream. So the trick is wake up.
It's been closer to a nightmare than a bad dream.
Wow.
Yes, it has.
Was it you guys that were talking? You guys, we were talking about zombies before the show started.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And in some ways, the pandemic is very much like a zombie apocalypse. In some ways.
Yes.
Yeah, in some, I guess.
In many ways.
In many ways. The world that I grew up in the 1960s, 1970s, into the 80s, that world doesn't exist.
No.
It is gone forever.
It's a shame. And it's a shame.
Just, it's all a bad dream. It's
yeah.
gone. It's just gone.
That was
and
the good dream.
It was. I never knew how good I had it with shag rug and TVs that you had to walk up and change the channel by hand. And all that.
Oh, my God, the suffering we went through.
and telephones that hung on a wall. Oh, goodness. And, you know, rotary
dial
phone.
You had to dial.
Yes. Yes.
That was work, man.
It was. Man, my fingers, no wonder I've got such a good grip.
That's right. Your phone, you couldn't just say to your phone, you couldn't just say to your phone, hey, Google, tell me this, and it would tell you that, you know.
Yeah.
Or Alexa,
yeah.
You know. You know, we had to go look it up.
Well, it's
yeah.
like it's like we used to have a phone number to call to find out the correct time of day. Now, a lot of
yeah.
people laugh at that, but if you don't know what time it is, hey, at least you can call a phone number and find out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk to the lonely time lady.
Yeah, exactly. In 3 seconds, the time will be, it's all a bad dream. Yeah, so.
What?
Wait,
what? No.
What? It's all a bad dream.
Your phone's ringing, Gar. Your phone's ringing, Gar.
I know. It is. It is. The phone is ringing off the hook.
Oh, it's all a bad dream. All a bad dream.
It's all a bad dream. So, yeah, maybe this after birth session will prompt people to go look up Chicken Man. I can't remember.
Excuse me.
Excuse you. How's
Chicken
your
Man. Oh. Like I said, there's cigarette smoke pouring out of the side of my neck. I don't get it.
Yeah. Or you wish there was. Yeah.
No, I don't.
I once did this for a Halloween thing. For a Halloween thing, this was the point where they had gotten away from the Ben Coopers, but a Ben Cooper would have worked. The Ben Cooper mask, plastic mask, a little rubber band, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, they moved away from that. The next iteration was a full hood of rubber you could put over your head. And I had a Batman rubber hooded mask. And I was smoking. I had a cigarette. I'd intake and then blow it out the nose. And when you do that, it doesn't come out. So it comes out through the eyes and the mouth. And it looked really weird having
yes.
having smoke coming out of the Batman mask. It was really weird. I would sit there and do it and then giggle in front of a mirror and everything just to see. That was so crazy. I could see through the smoke, but it was coming out around the eyes and nose and the mouth. It was all it was really weird.
Yep, it was fun being young and dumb.
It was fun being alive in the 60s and 70s and 80s and growing
yep.
up in that time. Now, did you guys have a little teeny bit of a footstep into the 50s? Am I wrong?
No.
Or are you
no.
guys 60s, 70s? Okay.
I was not born until 1960.
Yep.
Okay. Okay.
I just missed the 50s.
Right. So you guys are only like 4 or 5 years older than me. Is that right?
That's about right.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Right,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. There's some other folks I talk to, and they're like a whole decade older, you know, and they start talking about, well, I didn't have to serve in NAM.
Well, it depends on what day you call me on as to how old I feel.
Oh, yes. Oh, is that it?
Oh, yeah.
If you have a
stake
in your neck? Okay, yeah.
Oh, God.
Tylenol and bed rest might be the answer for you, Mr. Dale.
Yeah, I don't know.
You probably got puppy duty before that.
Yeah, how's your dog?
I don't know. He could be crashed by now. He better be.
But is are you having fun with doggy?
He's a handful.
he's a handful.
He's a frisky puppy, but I love him to death. He is the cutest stinking thing. But like children, sometimes when they're very smart, they're very challenging. But I saw this thing,
and I posted it on my page, but I don't know if you saw it. I watch the superhero stuff. If there's anything on TV superhero related, I watch it. Marvel, DC, whatever. And they just did this thing about the Titans, the Teen Titans, which is a DC thing. But anyway, they introduced Superman's dog Krypto into the story. And they've got a really nice looking all white dog as Krypto, because Krypto was an all white dog. But this Krypto is telekinetic and super strong, and he can fly and all the stuff. You know, and they really put it in there. One thing is that he really can understand language. So one of the guys says to Krypto, "Hey Krypto, would you go supervision heat me up some hot dogs?" And Krypto goes, "Woof," you know, and he takes off. And the guy says, "Oh, and see if you can find some bourbon." And then way down at the other end of the hall, you hear "Woof,"
bourbon.
Yeah, like he answers, "Okay," you know, it's
bourbon.
Like, sure, got it. Yeah, bourbon. I'll get that too. And I just started laughing so much because it was like, this dog is great. They just put it in there. The dog barked okay.
Hey, any dog that fetches bourbon is okay in my book.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh,
that's a good
bourbon.
Dog. Good boy. Extra treats for you, boy.
I'm telling you what, it was just so funny. The whole rest of that episode was dark and dour and creepy and all this. But there was that one dog thing, and it just – I just busted out laughing. It was like the best part was the dog thing. Krypto, get some bourbon too. It was like, all right, good dog.
Good boy.
That's too cool. It's like, wow, well, yeah, after I finish the hot dog, I'll get you some bourbon. Sure, no problem. You know. It was just so good. Love animals, love doggies, and just, wow, Krypto. They really made a good Krypto because Krypto, aside from the quote-unquote speech impediment he has, Krypto should be able to do a whole bunch of stuff. Super, super smart dog.
Yep.
I mean, there's some dogs out there that understand a vocabulary of 120 different items. Like, go get the pink octopus, and they go get it out of 100 different toys. They know which one is the pink octopus. You know, it's like,
I used to have a subscription to National Geographic, and there was this one article that was talking about intelligence of all different kinds of animals and rating them and so forth. And like my wife's bird, an African gray, they're like a 4-year-old almost, or like a 5-year-old. They're extremely smart. Memory, association, they can identify things. There are certain types of dogs. This one dog, I think it was a border collie. Oh my God. This thing, like you said, they know and recognize the color and shape and whatever, and they'll go get that specific item. It's crazy.
Right. Yeah, I do have to backtrack on that. I think dogs are colorblind, so you couldn't really go with color per se. I think. I could be wrong.
I don't know.
Yeah, you could say octopus, and you could say big octopus, small octopus, and maybe it would differentiate between the two. But you couldn't do colors, I don't think. Gray or darker gray. I don't know how that would really work out.
No, the darker gray one.
No, the darker gray. No, grayer than that. No, darker grayer than that. There you go. Good puppy.
Yeah, boy. Good boy.
So, yeah.
There's no such thing as a bad dog. But
no,
he's a little monster. He's a little monster.
And every person that has an animal, they have to look at themselves before they look at the pet when they go to discipline them about whatever it is. Because for more times than not, it's the human that's screwing up.
Oh, yeah. It's a language thing, and you're not understanding what they're saying.
Yeah, you know, or you're not training them correctly, or you're not training them positively, but training them negatively, and don't do that. That hurts them. That's just not good. It hurts their brain. It hurts their mind. They won't get bourbon for you when you ask.
Well, wait, no, hey, we can't cut off the bourbon.
Hey, there you go. All right, guys. Well, I'm gonna take off. It's 11:06. Ding dong. I don't know how long this thing lasts, but I'm gonna cut out of here.
All right.
Yeah, trying to bring in the schnoz.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, Dale. All right, Dave.
All right, Break a Leg in Colorado, Horrible Horror, Starring Gary the Ghoul at...
Yeah, all that fun stuff.
8 o'clock, right after Erie House Radio.
Uh-huh.
Say goodnight, Jimmy.
Good night.
Good night.
It's time to
Bye-bye.
Say good night. What for this sake but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the day, and ink-a-tink-a-doo.
Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Wherever.